ಜಯಂ ಶುಪಾಲ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹರ್ಷಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯಂ ನತಿ ಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹರ್ಷಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂತಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೋಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಟು ದ ಸಿಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಟು ದ ಸಿಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಟು ದ ಸಿಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಶ್ರೀ 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 ಗುರುವನ್ ಗೌರಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಬೌದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವೀಂ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧೇ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹ ಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಮುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವಾದ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಸ್ವೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾ ನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯಾ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋರ್ಸವ ಜಾಯತೆ ತಥಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾಥಸ್ತ್ವಂ ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಭಾವ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖಶಮನಂ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ಪರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿದರದಶ್ಚಾರ್ತೇಷ್ವಭಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾಟ್ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಹೃದಾಯ ಆದಿಗವಯೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂತಿ ಯತ್ ಸೂರಯ ತೇಜೋ ಪಾರಿಮೃತಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷ ಧಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತಕುಹಕಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ಪರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜ್ಜಿತ ಕೈದವೋತ್ರ ಪರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮತ್ಸರಾಣಾಂ ಸದಾಂ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾಪತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂ ವಾಪರೈಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯಮನುದ್ಯದೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿಭಿಃ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷುಭಿಃ ತಕ್ಷಣಾನ್ ನಿಗಮಕಲ್ಪತರೋರ್ಗಳಿತಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಕಮುಖಾದಮೃತದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುಧಂ ಪಿಪದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಕಾಃ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋತ್ಪತ್ತ್ಯಾದಿ ಹೇತವೇ ತಾಪತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನುಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂತಮನುಭೇದಮಭೇದಕೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈಪಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಕಾತರಮಜ್ಜುಹಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿದನ್ಮಯದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಮಾನತೋಸ್ಮಿ ನಿಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲ ಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರಮೇಕಂ ಮಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮದೀಪಮದಿತಿದೀರ್ಷದಾಂ ತಮೋಂಧಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಹ ಪುರಾಣ ಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನುಂ ಉಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಂ ಮುನೀನಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತದೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರಮುಗ್ಧಮೂರ್ತೇ ಕಳವೇಣೂಕುಣಿದಾದೃದಾನನೆಂದೋ ಮಮ ವಾಚಿ ವಿಜೃಂಭತಾಂ ಮುರಾರೇರ್ಮಧುರಿಂ ನರ್ತನಿಕಾಪಿ ಕಾಪಿ ಕಾಪಿ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವೀಂ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಶ್ರೀಮಲ್ಗುರುಚರಣಾರವಿಂದಾಭ್ಯಾಂ ನಮಃ ವಂದೇ ನಂದವ್ರಜಸ್ತ್ರೀನಾಂ ಪಾದರೇಣುಮಭೀಷ್ಟಶ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ಹರಿಗದೋದ್ಗೀತಂ ಪುನಾದೀಭುವನತ್ರಯಂ ಗೋಪೀಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಪರಮಾಣವೇ ನಮಃ ಪೀತಾಂಬರಂ ಕರವಿರಾಜಿತಚಕ್ರಶಂಗಂ ಕೌಮೋದಗೀ ಸರಸಿಜಂ ಕರುಣಾಸಮುದ್ರಂ ರಾಧಾಸಹಾಯಮಧಿಸುಂದರಮಂದಹಾಸಂ ವಾತಾಳೇಶಮನಿಶಂ ಹೃದಿ ಭಾವಯಾಮಿ ಕೋಮಳಂ ಕೂಜಯನ್ ವೇಣುಂ ಶ್ಯಾಮಳೋಯಂ ಕುಮಾರಕ ವೇದವೇದ್ಯವರಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವಾಸದಾಂ ಪುರತೋ ಮಮ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതി ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധയായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ശ്രീ ഭഗവാൻ വാചാം യേതാൻ മത്പദോ ഹിത്വാ ഭക്തിജ്ഞാനക്രിയാത്മകാൻ ക്ഷുദ്രാൻ കാമാംശനൈ പ്രാണൈർ ജുഷന്ത സംസരന്തിരേ സ്വേ സ്വേ അധികാരേ യാ നിഷ്ഠാ സഗുണപരികീർത്തിതാ വിപര്യസ്തു ദോഷസ്യാൻ ഉഭയോരേഷ നിശ്ചയാഃ ശുദ്ധ്യാശുദ്ധി വിധീയത സമാനേഷു വിവസ്തുഷു ദ്രവ്യസ്യ വിചികിത്സാർത്ഥം ഗുണദോഷൌ ശുഭാശുഭൌ ധർമാർത്ഥം വ്യവഹാരാർത്ഥം യാത്രാർത്ഥം ഇതി ചാനഖ ദർശിതോയം മയാചാരോ ധർമ്മമുദ്ധുഹതാം ധുരം ഭൂമി അംബം അഗ്നി അനിലാകാശം ഭൂതാനാം പഞ്ചദാധവ ആ ബ്രഹ്മസ്ഥാവരാദീനാം ശാരീരാം ഹാൽപസംയുതാഃ വേദേന നാമരൂപാണി വിഷമാണി സമേഷ്വപി ധാതുഷൂർദ്ധവ കൽപ്യന്ത പുരുദേശാം സ്വാർത്ഥസിദ്ധയേ ദേശകാലാദിഭാവാനാം വസ്തുനാം മമ സത്തമ ഗുണദോഷോ വിധീയേത നിയമാർത്ഥം ഹി കർമ്മണം അകൃഷ്ണസാരോ ദേശാനാം അബ്രഹ്മണ്യോ അശുചിർഭവേത് കൃഷ്ണസാരോപ്യ സൗവീരം കീകടാ സംസ്കൃതേരിണം സോ ഇൻ ദിസ് ചാപ്റ്റർ 21st ചാപ്റ്റർ കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് സെയിങ് ദാറ്റ് വാട്ട് വി ഡിസ്കസ്ഡ് ഇൻ ദ 20th ചാപ്റ്റർ വാട്ട് വാസ് ദാറ്റ് ദ ത്രീ യോഗ സിസ്റ്റംസ് ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ് ജ്ഞാനം കർമ്മം ഭക്തി Krishna discussed three yoga system in the 20th chapter. Those who do not follow any of those yoga systems, jnanam, karmam or bhakti, for them all rules apply. That is what Krishna is saying in this chapter. That those who do not follow any of the three yoga systems, for them all rules apply. Gunam, dosham, right, wrong, all these things has to be applied very strictly for others. So here Krishna says that for those who have purified themselves through the process of hearing or through bhakti, devotion, and through cultivation of knowledge, one who is purifying oneself in that way, they don't require any of these rules, regulations. That Krishna is making it clear. These rules and regulations are very complicated, isn't it? As we've seen yesterday, how complex the whole thing is. And according to the place, according to the people, according to the dharmam, everything can change from one place to another. And to know what is right and wrong is always very, very difficult. But here, first thing what Krishna wants to say is, those who are living in this world simply for the sake of sense enjoyment and also to exploit the material nature, for them all rules and regulations does apply, Krishna says. And in order to say that, first Krishna speaks about them in a very critical way. He says, Krishna is saying here that that because they are not following any of the yoga systems, any of the three yoga systems, and they are subjected to all kinds of rules and regulations, right and wrong, good and bad, things like that, naturally they will transmigrate from one body to another. They will have to keep changing their body. They are not going to escape from that system, Krishna says. So, but he also mentioned that what is, if you are fixed up in your sve sve adhikare ya nishta sa guna parigirtida. Krishna decided, defined gunam and dosham there. What is good and what is bad. He is saying there that those who are fixed up in their in their function world, according to their qualifications, sve sve adhikare ya nishta, that is considered to be good. That nishta is more important, that steadiness in doing things. Viparyastu doshasyal upayoresha nischaya. Anything outside that, which he does not follow any rules, regulations, he does things whatever he likes, in other words, instead of looking into one's own vasanas and karmam and being fixed in that, instead if he keeps on switching on to different things, what he is not qualified for, and he start doing such things, it is dosham, it is bad. Krishna says like that. Then after that, Krishna mentioned about shuddhi and ashuddhi, pure and impure things, how it is worked out, how to know something is pure and something is impure. That is what he spoke in the next one or two verses. He said, shuddhi ashuddhi vidiyade samaneshu bi vastushu dravyasya vichikilsartam gunadoshau shubhashubhau. This shuddhi ashuddhi is not pure and impure. It is not based on the object alone. It is also based on the person who is handling it, who is doing it. A lot of depends on the person who is doing that. And again, it changes. He says, dharmartham, vyavharartham, yatrartham, idijanakha. Darshidoyam mayacharo dharmam uddhokadam dhuram. So sometimes these rules will be very difficult to understand because it changes according to the place and according to the time and circumstances also. And Krishna is saying here that all these are really not absolute in that sense. What they call in the Shastram is kalpana matram. Kalpana means that it is something that has been decided by rishis, so in a particular way, so that it will be beneficial. In other words, it's not an absolute thing. It can, because it changes from place to place, from time to another time, from person to person, all kinds of variables in there. So that is what Krishna says here. And that he has spoken in three verses, in the next three verses. Bhumi, Ambam, Agni, Anilam, Agasham, Bhudanam, Panchadhatava, Abrahma, Savaradinam, Shariram, Alpa, Samyuta. Krishna says that from Lord Brahma onwards, all living entities in this world, that they are all created with the same material, five material elements. And all these living entities, they also have living force within them. Whether it is plants or trees, animals, human society, and even the demigods, and right up to Brahma, all living entities has got living force within that. Krishna is present in all of them. So, therefore, to think that something is higher and something is lower is only based on the kalpana, kalpita matram. It's called it like that. Sharira alpa samyuta. But strictly speaking, if you look at it, they're made of the same material from Brahma to grass. And also, the living force within Brahma and the living force within the grass is one and the same. They are not different. So practically there is no difference in that sense. But then why there is a difference? Something is higher and something is lower. That has been decided based on the circumstances in which the person. And that is doesn't have much of an importance, Krishna is saying like that. This is not being important thing. Vedena namarubani, mushamani sameshwari, dadu shuddhava alpyandam, edesham swartha siddhaye. So, the different living entities in this world, although they are made of the same material, and although the same living force is within them, the purpose of their existence varies. For example, the purpose of a tree which exists, and the purpose of an animal which exists, they are different. And again, purpose of an animal and the purpose of the human body is different. Purpose of a human body and the purpose of a demigod's body is different. So this variation is based on the body, what they have got. Although they have the same material made of and the same living force within, this variation is happening because of the different kinds of bodies. And that those different bodies has got different goals to achieve here. Human body has this goal to achieve self-realization. That is human body's goal. The tree doesn't have a goal like that, to realize the self. Tree exists, it produces its fruits or vegetables or whatever that it produces. and its duty is finished with that. Similarly, the animals also, they have got certain, every animal has its own justification for existence. After that is completed, they go leave their body and go. That's over with that. They don't have a duty of self-realization. Only in human body, Krishna is saying that there is a higher responsibility in the human body. That is to realize the truth. Because this opportunity is not given in the other body. This is for which Krishna is saying we have been created for this purpose, to realize the truth. Instead, Krishna gets upset when we go and do things what we are not meant to do, and we are trying to find happiness elsewhere. So it is in that Krishna says here, Deshakaladi bhavanam vastunam mama sattama gunadosho vidhiyede neyamartam hi karmanam. Krishna says that that time, desham kalam, time and place, and bhalam nimittam, the result and the cause, and adhigari, the person who has the qualifications, all these is decided only for one reason, that somehow or the other to get people out of karma, so that they don't get entangled more and more in the working business, working active karma. To get them out of it, all these rules and regulations have been set up so that people don't get caught in this and get stuck in that. Otherwise, if human mind is such that if you do not have any restrictions, it will simply go after exploiting the nature that we can see, isn't it? Always that's the human nature, to go and exploit the material nature as much as possible. So just to check that tendency and to quietly bring them out of that karma vasana, that desire for karma, these rules and regulations have been set up, says Krishna. So then from now onwards, we had discussed yesterday also that Krishna said this, that the all these rules and regulations, variety of them, and so variable they are. As mentioned yesterday, a young man must take bath. He should go and clean himself every day. But a very old person who cannot go to the tank to bathe, for him, he may not even take bath, but if he has just washed his feet and hands and the face, and then he put some tilak on the face, he is already considered to be pure. Similarly, small babies, they also, you can't expect them to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and to do so other things, or the things what a young man will do. So the baby is clean because the baby, just if you sprinkle some water on the face or wipe the face with water, the baby is considered to be clean. So these rules are like that, Krishna says. And Krishna also mentions that this is to point out that these things can be learned from observing people who has got good acharam, who follows these things properly. What is interesting about that is, Krishna says, that there are people who have good knowledge of the Shastram, who performs very good austerities in their life, but their greatness is that if you live with them, you will notice how they live in this world. And according to the place and time, they can adjust themselves. They are very playable in that way, according to the place and time. They know in that particular place, this is what is to be done, and they will do that. They'll do the right thing. In other words, they are not holding on to something and saying that this is it, I'm not going to change, I need this. According to the time and place, they know how to follow the rules. They know how to work with that, and all at the same time, you will notice that you will this quality in them, that they have that full knowledge of the Shastram and always in that consciousness, right consciousness. The greatness of these personalities is this, that they'll always be very pure. They'll always be very pure. In other words, these external things will not affect their inside. That is their capacity. All these acharam, all these rules and regulations, it's all external, isn't it? But these external things will not affect their inside. That is their greatness. Wherever you take them, maybe the situation is different, time is different, place is different, the facilities are different. Still, they will adjust themselves in such a way that inside consciousness they will keep in a very good state, in a good state. So, and this you can see in some families, in the olden times particularly, nowadays it's very difficult to say, because things have become so much changed, and families also have been uprooted from everywhere, and they've been thrown away all parts of the world, and things are happening in that way. But if you look traditionally in the some of the families, they have worship of Salagram Shila, worship of Shivalingam, and worship of so many different deities at home. And sometimes you will see that after they have done all their worship, everything, children will come and play with those deities. They'll play with those deities. And you may wonder, how is that, that they were worshipping seriously that form a while ago, and now the children are playing with that. And but if you ask, say anything about it to them, they will say, well, it doesn't matter. At least let them play with the Salagram, let them play with the Shivalingam, because by doing like that, this is how we also become serious about deity worship later on. So initially children may play with it. They don't know what they are doing. They are just children, isn't it? So therefore, samskaram or this purifications in this way happens at different levels, right from the childhood. When they grow up, all these things, they get used to the Salagram Shila, they get used to Shivalingam, they used to get Tulsi plants, they used to get seeing the deities. In this way, later on they become serious in that. Whereas when you introduce them at a later date, it becomes very difficult for them to take that concept inside. Whereas right from the early days, even if they are playing with the deities, even if they are playing with the Shivalingam or they are playing with the Salagram Shila, they know that it is a part of their life, they will accept it that way. Only thing is, when they grow up with proper understanding, they'll become serious about their worship of the deity. So, there are other people some people learn these rules and regulations from the books, and in the name of rules and regulations, they'll frighten others. They'll frighten other people. And this is one side. Some people are like that. They'll frighten others in the name of rules and regulations. And there are other people, they won't care for any rules and regulations. There's also another side to it. These two types of people, one who frightens others with rules and regulations, sometimes you will come across some people like that. And there are other people who doesn't follow any rules and regulations, a law unto themselves. They'll do what they like. So both these people are wrong in the sense that acharam is necessary. That one should know what is necessary, and you should know, he has to know to stand where it is right place to stand, in the right place to stay, in the proper way to act. This you should know. Jnanam, knowledge, bhakti, all these things are necessary. Because if you have all these things, then you will be fixed in sadhana. Sadhana will become your normal, you will be steady in your sadhana. You see, if you give up all the acharam, what happens is there won't be any sadhana in your life. Sadhana will not be there. And we need everything. We need the rules and regulations, but you have to know where to apply and how to apply that. And you also need the bhakti, knowledge and devotion. And you also have to know that by doing all these things, you are fixed in your sadhana and spiritual life. The idea behind everything, as Krishna said before, is that to get us out of this attachment to karmam. Karmam is the one that is very powerful force inside, an urge inside to engage in karmam, is it not? So if there is no discipline in life, in none of these, the normal tendency will be to go into doing some vigarmam, nishiddha karmam. Remember yesterday we were saying, first thing is nishiddha karmam, forbidden things, we'll go and do that. From nishiddha karmam, we have to come to kamya karmam, at least fruitive activities. It's better than doing things which are forbidden. From fruitive activities, from kamya karmam, we have to come to vihida karmam. That is a progression.
idea behind all this is to get that karma vasana out from inside, not to get stuck in the karma. Karma is not going to help us at the end, isn't it? Knowledge is what's going to help. Jnanam is what is going to help us out of this quagmire where we are in. So Krishna says here, so many in this chapter is a particularly interesting chapter in the sense that Krishna is making fun of all the people, all kinds of people. Krishna makes fun of them. He's asking this question. You are talking about purity and impurity. If a child is born, they say that place is impure for 10 days. So he's asking how on the 11th day it has become pure. This is all in the society, isn't it? In the Vedam, all these kind of rules and regulations are there. When a death happens, we say some people follow 10 days, some people 12 days, some people 15 days. They say they are not pure. You follow rules and regulations like that. So how is that? He says on the 15th, 16th day you became pure. Where is this rule? He is asking this. So, and similarly, you can see so many rules are like that. Some people say they won't eat the meat on a particular day in a week. It is all there in the Shastram. All these kinds of rules. They will eat other days. On a particular day, they won't eat. They say it's against their principle. So like this, so many rules and regulations have been created. And Krishna says, you are caught up in all these things, but you just don't know what is the truth behind it. Similarly, food is concerned. A rich man, some food he cannot eat. But a poor man can eat. He doesn't get sick. Rich man gets sick if he eats that food. Because he will not be able to eat it. But a poor man, he will eat it, he will not get sick. He survives with that food. So all this is common sense only. So in a favorable place, when you get purified by bathing, and or you can get purified by bathing. But if you go to another place which is very, very cold, you can't bathe. It is so cold. So what are you supposed to do? So there, if you just touch the water 3 times and put it on your head, you are pure. It is, that is the rule. Says, if you go to Kedarnath or Badrinath, you may not be able to bathe sometimes. If there is no hot water, it is impossible to bathe, isn't it? It's impossible to bathe. But if you come to the land where it's very hot, everywhere it's hot, then you have to bathe. That's the rule. So it has changed according to the place, circumstances, isn't it? Similarly, old people and young children, this rule doesn't apply about bathing is concerned. So this shuddhi, pure, impure, this will keep changing according to the person. According to the person, it will change. According to the place, it will change. According to the place, it will change. Similarly, grains, rice, wheat and all that. If there is a lot of impure things in that, because when you bring harvested from that, you put them in the sun, dry them, and in the wind, a lot of it get purified. They get purified. Just being dried in the wind or the sun, they get purified in that way. Similarly, pots which are made of wooden pots, they can be cleaned with the earth. Using the earth, you can clean them and they are pure. Ghee and milk, if you boil them, they become pure. They become pure. Deer skin, brahmacharis needs the deer skin. They wear, brahmacharis are supposed to wear deer skin. It's only the modern day brahmacharis wear all the clothes like the way they wear. But traditionally, brahmacharis dress is deer skin. Deer skin is what they wore. So that is why in the Vedic times, brahmacharis used to wear deer skin. And that deer skin, when they bring it from the forest, it's impure. But if it is put it in the oil, it becomes pure and dry, and then it's pure. So, so all these purification process also, if you ask, how is that purified? There is no answer to that. The rishis have decided that it is pure in this way. That's their conclusion. Better not to ask more than that. You don't want to say, tell me how it has become pure. If you ask that question, there is no answer. Similarly, mantram. Any mantra,
if you hear from a acharya or a realized soul, if you hear from him and if you hear with its meaning and the mantram in the proper way from a realized soul, if you hear, that's pure. That's pure. Take for example, you can see in the Bhagavatam, there are these things, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya mantram. Dhruva Maharaj chanted, and there's also another one or two places. We are also chanting. But why we don't have the same effect as Dhruva Maharaj had? Reason is this, Dhruva Maharaj received from Sri Narada Maharshi how to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So when Narada Maharshi gave that mantra to him, it has come from Narada Maharshi, that is the potency in the mantra. Mantram everybody can chant, but the potency is in the person who has chanted the mantra. The potency of the mantram has come from the person who has chanted, not in the mantra itself, it is in the person who has chanted. So therefore, when Dhruva Maharaj heard mantram, Vedavyasam from Sri Narada Maharshi, he went to the forest, he chanted the mantra for how many, 6 months or so when he was there, he chanted, he attained perfection, isn't it? Similarly, you will see Prajedas also. They took the mantra from Sri Narada Maharshi and they became perfect in their sadhana, isn't it? Similarly, you will see others also who have been instructed in the same way. Prahlada also, same way from Sri Narada Maharshi received the mantra. So basically, mantram is not what it does. The person from whom you have received that mantra, it is his spiritual realization, that is what is coming through that. So time, place, the person who is doing it, and the padartham. Padartham means the object, what is being purified, the mantram, what is being chanted, the karmam, all these of them, if they all are pure, then it is dharmam. If it is impure, it is adharmam. That is how Krishna is saying. If it is all pure, that means if it is all done in the proper way, and if it's done as Krishna has spoken here, and they are pure, then it is dharmam. If not, it is adharmam. Another thing, Krishna is saying, brahmachari is allowed to beg. He can go and beg. It's not considered wrong. Householder should not beg. Householder should not beg. And similarly, householder can accept a wife. He can have an association with the wife. Whereas brahmachari, vanaprastham, sannyasam, he cannot have an association with a wife, with a woman. So, so for them, what is dharmam for householder is adharmam for others. And what is dharmam for brahmachari, grahasthan, brahmachari, vanaprastham and sannyasam, what is dharmam for them is adharmam for the householder. So it again changes based on the ashrama, isn't it? So Krishna also says that suppose somebody is committing violence all the time, killing animals or something like that. He is living on that. His livelihood is that. He's always engaged in violence, slaughtering animals and things like that. If he is going to kill one more animal, Krishna is saying it's not going to make a big difference. Because that's his livelihood, he's been living like that. And similarly, one who is always lying, if he is lying one more time, that's not going to make a big difference. Krishna says that someone who is lying all the time, if he is going to lie once more time, it's not going to make a big difference. That is Krishna's point. So, what the purpose is, Krishna is saying, this right and wrong, gunam and dosham, is determined, or it is set up for only one reason, that somehow or the other, to get the person out of pravritti to nivritti. In other words, pravritti margam means that you have an excessive attachment to work and to the results of the work. And which means that we have, you understand what that means, isn't it? When one is attached to work, it creates four problems. Ryagam, dvesham, kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam. Four things. This will come with that. So unless we withdraw, unless that karma vasana goes away and desire for action goes away from us, these four things will continue to
happen. So therefore, pravritti margam creates these four. To withdraw from that is called a nivritti margam. And withdrawal is through the process of karma yogam for those who are very attached, and for others through the process of these injunctions, from pravritti margam to bring them to nivritti margam. Somehow or the other create that situation favorable for them to withdraw from action, to withdraw from karma and come to nivritti. So only through nivritti margam, Krishna says, this by which you can free yourself from the influence of the karma, he says that lamentation, illusion, fear, these things will go from inside. Lamentation, illusion and fear, when they go from inside, because that is what nivritti margam is, then they goes away in a natural way. Atmanubhuti, knowledge of the self will happen in that person. Krishna is saying like that. So the reason Krishna is saying all these things in the Bhagavadam, we may think that Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna has to say all these things. Reason is that this, that in the Karmakandam of the Vedam, there is a lot of these things which are connected with these things. And if you ask, is there any meaning to all these things? Yes, there is a meaning to it. But because it covers a certain big section of the people, isn't it? Those who are interested in spiritual life seriously and those who are aiming for self-realization is very few in this world. Majority of the people requires rules and regulations and injunctions. Krishna is saying that these rules and that is why Karmakandam, which is a very big section of the Vedam, is all related to these rules and regulations. So therefore, for some people it will be beneficial to have these rules and regulations. For others it may not be of any use. But if people start thinking, oh, majority of the Vedam is Karmakandam, so I should be busy with Karmakandam, and those who are thinking like that, that is whom it is about whom Krishna is making this joke. Krishna is making fun of them. That those who think that Karmakandam is a major part of the Vedam, and if Karmakandam is the whole purpose of Vedam, because people start thinking most of it is Karmakandam in the Vedam, so that's what we should be doing. And if you go in that direction, it is about them Krishna is making fun in this chapter. And so therefore you will see in the next few verses Krishna is saying that those who think that by following this Karmakandam everything is going to be perfection, in the Krishna calls them as kaminaha kripanaha. Krishna says, look into those verses in the 21st chapter, you will see Krishna saying that that's how he says. After that, he says that 27th verse, if you look, because a lot of other things are related to Karmakandam. He's saying here, 27th verse, if you look, kaminaha kripana lubdaha pushpeshu bhalabuddhayaha agnimugdha dhumadanda swam lokam navidantite nate mamanga janandi kridistam eidam yadaha ukta shastra asutrupo yadha nihara jakshusham te me madama vijnaya paroksham vishaya almagaha himsayam yadi ragasya yajna evana chodanam himsa viharo hyalabdai pashubhisu sukhechaya yajande devada yajnei pidra bodhapadin khalaha. All these verses, 27, 28, 29, 30, all these verses Krishna is saying that in the Karmakandam people perform sacrifices, yajnam, yagam, and in there they kill animals, pashu himsa, himsa is there. And then they are thinking, we will do all these things here and then we will go to the heavenly planets and enjoy there and enjoy the life in the heavenly planets. And those people, they will live here for some time, Krishna says, and they will come back again here and fall into the same material life. That is why Krishna has spoken all these things in the other verses also, which you can see. Like yesterday, we finished at that verse, 8th verse. Akrishna saryom deshanam abrahmanyo ashuchir bhaved. Krishna saryopya sauviram kikata samskriterinam. Krishna mentions there about talking about that dirt places are impure, where there are no people with Brahminical culture, and where there is no particular deer, Krishnamrgam, where they are not there, that place is not suitable for performing sacrifices. Then he talked about karmanyu gunavan kalo drivyada soda evava yato nivartade karvam sadosho karmagas mrutaha. That that some places he says dravyam. Dravyam means the materials that's necessary for executing sacrifices. Those materials are not available, or for various other reasons, karmam is blocked. They are unable to execute the karmam, and then, or due to some particular time, place, and then that place is impure, Krishna says. Then there are so many other verses he is saying here, that that's what I've spoken before, that they are not particularly important for those who are serious about spiritual life, Krishna. That same thing. Kujal guna obi dosha syal, dosha obi vithina guna. Guna dosha to neemastad vidam eva bhadade. Samana karmajaranam padidananna padakam. Ulpatiyu guna sango na shayana padathyada. This is all about sannyasi, brahmachari, what his rules applies to them. And this important points, what Krishna said like this, that mantram, karma shuddhi, all this is based on the person more than the karmam itself, or more than the mantram. It is the person from whom it is, his shuddhi, his purity is more important than the mantram itself. So the idea of saying all these things was that Krishna is saying here that purpose of Vedam is knowledge of the self. That's what the point he is bringing at the end. Purpose of Vedam is to have the knowledge of the self. And it is for that purpose all these things Krishna has spoken. All these things Krishna has spoken. But then why all this karmakandam and other things in the Vedam? It is only for the purpose of chitta shuddhi. For one's purification. One's purification. If the chittam is not pure, if chitta shuddhi is not there, you may keep on hearing Vedanta Shravanam. Vedantam, if you keep on hearing, but still self-knowledge will not develop within. This is the problem. That is why chitta shuddhi is important. If chitta shuddhi is not there, even if you have heard for a very, very long time, the knowledge of the self will not develop within. If you look into Viveka Chudamani also, Ajari Swamiji says this, that the reason is this. This knowledge of the self is not something has to come from outside. That is the difference. It's already there in us, what we are. We are, you see, two things. One is the soul and the other one is the mind. What is the difference between soul and the mind? Have you ever thought about this? It's a very interesting thing. We normally identify with the mind, isn't it? We, all our viharam is based on the mind. And mind is another force that's come from the soul. From the soul. What is the difference between soul and the mind? It is like this. The mind, its nature, it cannot discuss about the mind. Mind can discuss about everything else in this world. Mind can talk about you all. Mind can talk about everything, about the world, about everything. But if you ask the mind, mind, can you discuss about the mind? Mind doesn't know what to do with it. Mind will be blank then. Isn't it? My mind, I cannot discuss about, my mind cannot discuss about mind. My mind. That is the way mind works. Mind will deal with everything else in this world except itself. It cannot do. Atma is the opposite. Atma is on its own always. It can only talk about itself. It doesn't know anything else. This is the difference between Atma and the mind. This is a very important point. Paramacharya mentions this. You can see the voice of God also, this same thing. He said, this is where that difference is, fine difference between Atma and the mind. So Atma, by very nature, all it knows is only Atma. Because it is never touched by anything from the world, isn't it? Atma is not touched by sin, pious activity, sinful activity, gunam dosham, right, wrong. All these things has no bearing on the Atma. Why? Because Atma is not interested in any of these things. Atma cannot be touched by any of those things. Is it not? That's a very important point. If you keep this in your head, at least, that the difference between the mind and the self, that is how you come out of this mind. Mind is capable of looking at everything in the world and analyzing it, absorbing it, accepting it, rejecting it. All this mind can do. But mind cannot discuss about the mind. Suppose you tell the mind to discuss about the mind, mind will be helpless. It cannot have the capacity. Atma, on the other hand, Atma can only discuss about Atma. I don't know whether you got that. Atma is on its own. It doesn't need any of these things. It doesn't need a mind. It doesn't need a body. It doesn't need an intelligence. It doesn't need an ego. Nothing. It is completely independent. And it remains like that all the time. Atma remains in that state all the time. That is why Krishna is Atma Jnanam. In the Vivekananda Charitamrita, it will come very clearly. He says there that similarly, this knowledge of the self, it is in the Atma. Knowledge is there already in the soul, in the self. In the soul, it's already there. It doesn't have to come from outside. Whereas mind needs it from outside. Mind needs it from outside. Atma doesn't need it from outside. Atma Jnanam, knowledge of the self, is already there in the self. And this is the most important thing. So that is why he says here that actually what we are inquiring after, what are we inquiring about? About ourselves. Who we are. This is what we are inquiring. Just see the fun of that. We are going around asking everybody, who am I? Who am I? Isn't it? The question is, who am I? It is that question we are going around asking everybody. We are going to all the gurus, all the people in this world, inquiring about me. I am asking, who am I? Don't you see the fun in that? So that's what he says here. He gives an example like this, that I kept the glass here on my top of the nose, and I'm looking everywhere is my glass in the same way. Where have I left my glass specs? And I'm looking through my own glass, which is right on top of my nose. So that is why he says, all what is required is that person who has realized this, he has to tell you that it is on your tip of the nose. Similarly, he has to point out to us that he is inside here. As soon as that is come, it is realized that doubt is gone, everything is finished. And that is what we call us in the Upanishads as Tattvamasi. Tattvamasi, that one word in the Upanishads, is that is this principle. To point out to us the thing what you are looking for is you. Tattvam asi. And if you keep on expanding that, that is when we say that you are not the body, you are not the mind, you are not the intelligence, you are not the ego. All these things are only spoken to get you out of this identity, isn't it? So when our Shraddha, our attention becomes towards a self, Swarupanmukham, it means. Swarupa means towards ourselves, and it solves the problem. It avoids everything. And this one simple thing, why is it that after hearing so many times in so many places, it's not happening? Still it doesn't happen. And even after studying all the Vedic literature, it's not getting clear still. And Vedantam is very, very simple in that way. But nothing else can be as easy as this, to point out to us our identity is spirit, soul, nothing else, isn't it? So, only in Vedantam, therefore, they are saying to us that you don't have to do anything actually. All what is required in this, turn the attention inwards. That is the only thing they are expecting from us. So, even though it is so direct, it becomes difficult, isn't it? And we are unable to hear that properly. Unable to hear that. Hear means it's not having the impact inside us. Impact inside us. Although it is going through the ear, it's getting blocked on its way to the heart, isn't it? And this blockage is in the jnanis call it as anyabhinivesham. Anyabhinivesham, that is what the name they have given for that. What does that anyabhinivesham mean is this, that I still have a lot of things to do here in this world. I still have a lot of things to do in this world, and that will not go very easily from inside. It comes by hearing a lot, by reading a lot, by thinking about it a lot, and by experiencing life in various ways. You will come to understand that one day there is nothing to be done in this world. You will come to understand that. But by the time, it may be quite a long time, by the time that come to that understanding. When we are young, you think we have a lot to do here, isn't it? We have a lot of things to do here. And profession, career, and all sorts of things they have created, education, and so many goals in material life. So Krishna says here that when you come to this conclusion, there is nothing to be done in this world practically. That is what is called Chitta Shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi means that. That inside you have come to realize it, that there is nothing much to be done here. All this what we think we have to do this, we have to do that. All these things, and that has to go from inside. And that is what Krishna is saying here. This thing will only happen, some of them will go, this thoughts inside, by going through it. That's the only way it can go. Sometimes when a lot of desires built up inside, if you go through the misery, then that desire will go. Isn't it? That we know by experience in life. That when you go through some misery, then you won't desire it anymore. You won't desire it anymore. That is, householder life is like that. Once you go through householder life, you'll remain as a sannyasi for the rest of the... In any lifetimes, you'll say to Krishna, take me, give me birth as a sannyasi. Don't want this anymore in life. So certain things you have to go through. There is no other way. That vasana won't go from inside, because it's so strongly there. And any amount of injunction, because if you read Krishna's words in the Bhagavatam about householder life and our life today, you can see that we are nowhere close to Krishna's standard. What Krishna is expecting from a householder, is it? You can see some of the things he has spoken very strongly, very strong words he has used about householder. Sri Narada Maharshi also has used. So, but in spite of all that, we still think householder life is fantastic. Everything will be all right still. We are all in it together, as they say. So, but that desire will only go when you go through that householder life. Then you will have one day, you'll come to the conclusion, this is not the best life, there must be something better than this to go through. So what to do? That's why it is. So that Chitta Shuddhi will come in that way, one thing. Some other thing, through knowledge it will come. Through knowledge, by hearing and discussing and reading, and this way, through knowledge you will realize that it was not good to have that desire inside. That what I'm talking about, in order that Chitta Shuddhi to develop inside. Chitta Shuddhi means basically wiping out all the desires from inside, isn't it? Some desires will go by experiencing it. Some desires will go through knowledge, by hearing from others. Some other things, some other desires, if you work very hard for that, and if you didn't get it, then it will go. That's also some type of desires like that. You worked very hard for that throughout life. For many, many years you've been working, struggling to get it. And finally you realized it, it's useless. And then that way that desire will go. So in this way there are many kinds of desires inside. And all of this is stopping that knowledge of the self manifesting, which is inside. And nor atmajnanam, or knowledge of the self, there is no time factor connected with that. But to realize the self, it doesn't require much time. The time required is for chittashuddhi. Purification is the one which is taking time. You see? When in our life, when we have all these things going through in our life, actually it's all a purification process. It is this purification process that is taking time. But knowledge of the self is not complicated. That is easy to get it. That is what Viveka Chudamani says. That all the delay is in chittashuddhi, in developing chittashuddhi. Because of the vasanas and the various desires and all kinds of chittavritti inside, that is delaying this realization. And then we are asking, why it's not happening to me? I've been in the spiritual life for the last 40 years. But I have also brought a big baggage with me from so many lifetimes. And I'm scrubbing it to clean it up. But it doesn't get cleaned very easily. So that is what this verse is, Krishna is saying here. Krishna says, spiritual life is very simple. That you are spirit soul, you are not this body. That's all it is. Isn't it? And in simple terms, it looks very simple. That two statements, isn't it? I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. That's all. Aham Brahmasmi. But in realization, it's not happening. Where is the delay? Delay is in chittashuddhi. Chittashuddhi is causing the delay. Not Aham Brahmasmi is causing the delay. That is the point Krishna is making here. And when inside is pure, the symptom of that is seriousness will come. Jijnyasa. That is the way how you see that purity inside. A person is getting more and more pure. How do you know that? The way to know that is this jijnyasa, that I want to grow spiritually. I want to realize the truth. I want to understand what it means. All other things are insignificant in this world. Whatever comes in life, let it come and go. What can I do about it? This attitude will come. You won't be too concerned about it, in other words. Because everything is priority at the end, isn't it? If spiritual life becomes the priority, then all other things you won't care. What does it matter at the end? What is going to happen at the end? One day you will leave the body and go from here. So all our honor, dishonor, right, wrong, and our material existence even, is not that critical when compared to the realization of the self is concerned. Krishna is giving that instructions there in this chapter. That's what he's pointing out. He's saying that in the pursuit for self-realization, nothing else matters in this world. Everything else is secondary. It has to take the second place. That is a Krishna's point. So, therefore, this understanding, Krishna is saying here, that this jijnyasa, remember that saying, adhado brahma jijnyasa. It is that state that Sutram is talking about. When one has come to this state, then there will be jijnyasa. Athato brahma jijnyasa. Athato brahma jijnyasa. Not that I just got a human body, I got brahma jijnyasa. No. After getting the human body, after going through all these experiences and chitta shuddhi has happened, and then inside that jijnyasa has come. That is what Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying there. Athato brahma jijnyasa. This is the first sutram in the Brahma Sutram. The first sutram in the Brahma Sutram. What he is saying is, after you have purified your existence, when complete chittashuddhi has happened, which means all desires have gone away from inside. Practically the state of a person who is cultivating jnanamargam, that is how it is. All desires he has given up. Because through experience he has learned that this world is not something worthwhile investing time and energy. There's nothing to gain here. Everything is a loss at the end here. Even if you have accumulated a lot of wealth, one day you have to leave them here and go. Is it not? And similarly, what to talk about wealth and social circle and all that. Leaving aside all that, including your own body, which you are caring for throughout life, you just have to drop it here and leave this world, is it not? So including the body, you have to drop here and go away from here. When that is the case, why should we be so concerned about it? That has to be worrying us. So Krishna is saying here that awareness inside, when he has come to that state, that he is starting think at that time, when he looks at himself, he finds his own body as an amazing phenomenon, this body. Why? He says here, who am I? And he starts thinking about his own identity. He is looking. It is then that this knowledge of the self becomes very effective in a person. Normally, what we inquire is using our mind and brain, isn't it? Here you can see it is not the mind and brain. What it is here is direct experience in life, and as you said, through direct experience or through knowledge from the books and the shastram, or as Krishna has mentioned before, that that after endeavoring hard, realizing that there is nothing to be achieved here or attained here. With all that, all the vasanas have gone away from inside, desires have gone away from inside. In that state, Krishna says that chitta shuddhi has happened to him, and the symptom of that chitta shuddhi is that he will inquire about himself in a very natural way. Nobody has to tell him that. Sometimes you will see this when people have gone through a lot of distress in life. I don't know whether you have met people. I have met people like that. When they have gone through a lot of distress in life, one day they decided, enough is enough now. Pack up and left home. And they have gone to Himalayas, spent many, many years in Himalayas, with one Bhagavad Gita or with some Upanishads, reading them, reflect. Because why? In that state of mind, when they read the book, it made sense to them. When all that distress happened in life. Otherwise, it won't work, because they had desires, like we all had, they also had desires. But the life turned out in such a way for them. I'll give you one example. There was a school teacher. I've seen this person, this is why I'm saying. This school teacher, he became a head teacher. He was a school teacher, he became a head teacher. And in the school, in several classes, there were a large number of students, 40, 45 students. In India, it was like that. This happened about 40, 45 years ago. And in the classrooms, them days, punishment was very severe. All the teachers had a cane. And if you did something wrong, he will tell you to show the hand. And 5 times, 7 times, 12 times, whatever time, he will beat, and he will feel hurt, and he will bite your teeth and hold the hand like this. It was allowed. There was no, like here what they have got. Here you can't touch the child. Immediately, like a butter, it will melt. That's a rule here, isn't it? What kind of rule is this? You can't say anything to them, so they won't listen also. So for us it was different. If you show the hand, show the hand. And you know what that cane had at the end, with the lead there was a ball. It was melted and attached to that stick. So when they beat with that cane, it will be very hurting that. And this head teacher happened to be, he never got married in life. You can imagine, he had no children. So he didn't have any mercy towards the children. He was so severe. So it so happened, it was a very sad thing what happened, that in that one particular class, one particular student, he misbehaved. And in a bad mood, this head teacher noticed that, and he went to the room. Govinda was his name. He went to the room and he saw this child doing some nonsense he was doing. Don't know what it was. So what he did was, attached to the classroom, there was another small room where they stored various things for the students to use, you know, like the they store all their books and other things, right? He put that child in and locked him up there as a punishment, just for a few hours. It so happened a cobra was in that room. Nobody knew anything about it. Somehow the cobra has gone into that room, because in the school all these things happen. I don't know, here there's no cobra also. And after a few hours, they went and opened the room. The cobra has bitten the child and he's dead. Child was dead. You should have seen that day, that school teacher, he threw the whole thing away, left home, walked out from home. That guilt inside, he went to the Himalaya straight away, walked all the way. All the way from Kerala, all the way to Himalaya, he walked. After 25 years, he came back from Himalayas. By then, he was a changed person. How hurt he was, and that guilt inside has completely threw him off the balance of survival in this world. All desires has gone. But by the time he came back, he had no fear in him. He has completely, because of the experience in life and because the people with whom he associated with in Himalayas, with the great yogis and jnanis who live there, due to their association, his attitude in life has completely changed. Now, this time when he has come back, he has already acquired several yoga siddhis in him. He could go to any hole where there is a snake. He'll put his hand in and pull the snake out from the hole. That kind of capacity. And he will come to the temples, he will stay there. He won't talk to anybody. That guilt inside has completely changed the person inside. He'll go stand in front of the deity, and as soon as the deity doors are open, he will look after the deity and pay his obeisances, and tears will come from his eyes, and then he will walk away from there. That is how he was. So what I'm saying here is that when chitta shuddhi happens in a person due to experiences in life, this can happen. Many people who have, just like you can see, many devotees who joined Prabhupada in the movement, they had such an experience in the Vietnam War. Guru Kripa and many others, they were bombing and they have seen what misery means in life. That is why they had no problem at all in taking to Krishna consciousness seriously, even though it was an alien culture for them. Reason is this, that if you see such misery in life, then you don't want to be here anymore. That was their realization. That's what they've seen in life. When they were, because when Prabhupada went to America in 66, Vietnam War was closing down, isn't it? A lot of them, drafting was going on. Young men were recruited to the army who didn't want to fight, and they were sent to Vietnam to fight. And there they had to go and bomb women and children and many people who are nothing to do with them. They are not their enemies even. We know some devotees like that who were in that, right in the middle of that war. They were fighting against the Vietnamese people. But finally what happened? After that the war was over, they all came back, but they all came back with a lot of heavy heart. They came back from the war zone. Even today it's happening, isn't it? Many people, you see these programs in the BBC talking about people who come back from Afghanistan. They're also feeling similar things, experiences in life. So when we get such experiences, chitta shuddhi will happen very easily. Then all desires will go. Up to that time, this Maya will tell you, I got this to do, that to do, I got to sort this out, that out. This will go on like this life. But suddenly a blow like this will put an end to everything. You don't want any more to sort out. And if there is nothing to be done here, there is no further planning, will all stop at that time. So Krishna is saying here that the when your mind becomes pure, chitta shuddhi happens. In a very natural way, you'll become spiritual, spiritually inclined. Attention will fall on the soul. It'll come onto the soul. So attention will turn towards yourself. That's what Krishna says here. And you will start questioning about yourself, who you are. This inquiry will begin very strongly. And little by little, you will understand that karmam is not the answer. That's when they come to understand. Karmam is not the answer. Because karmam has not helped you to realize the truth, is it? Karmam cannot realize you the truth. It is through karmam that we are suffering, and only when such experiences in life comes, then you becoming so serious about spiritual life that you start realizing that I don't want to do any karmam here. All karmam creates this problem at the end. So, and it is that same way, even those karmam that is spoken in the Vedam, even that you will give up at that stage. So all the karmam in the Vedam is only spoken to get you out of the other karmam in this world. Remember, yesterday we were discussing this. That nishiddha karmam, forbidden things you shouldn't do. It is for that reason that kamya karmam is spoken. From kamya karmam, one has to come out and to become vihita karmam. This way, step by step, this karma vasana inside must go. This is the goal behind everything, all this process. It is for this purpose. A person went to the forest and he got a bunch of firewood, a bundle of firewood. He tied it very strong with a rope and brought it home. A bundle of firewood, he went to the forest, collected it, tied it all together and brought it home. He tied it so strongly, when he got home, he wanted to untie that. He couldn't untie it. So another person who was passing through, he came there. He said, don't worry about it. He brought another rope and he tied it again much more stronger than the previous one. So what happened? The previous rope which was tied, it became a little loose because he has tied it stronger than that. This karmagandam in the Vedam is like that. We have a karma vasana inside, isn't it? Strong karma vasana. So through karmagandam, we are already tied. We are already tied with this karma vasana. Karmagandam comes and ties us a little bit more stronger because karmagandam tells you a lot of injunctions, lot of restrictions, and ties you so strongly that the whole karma vasana goes away from inside. This is just an example to show to that. This bundle of ropes, bundle of firewood and the rope. It's like that. So, normally difficult to come out of karma, isn't it? So, therefore, vihita karma, what it does is, it gives you a lot of rules and regulations and says to you, do this whole day so that you won't go and do some nonsense somewhere else. That is why karma is instructed like that, isn't it? For Brahmana, from the way he wakes up in the morning, right up to 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he has got things to do. By the time he finishes everything, he won't have any strength or energy to do anything else. And his attention won't go towards anything else. So this is all the purpose behind it. So therefore, from morning to waking up to right up to night, going to bed, different kinds of sadhana, karmanushtanam, all these things are given to him, and many instances they say that all sadhana is like that. All the sadhana, what we do in spiritual life is also like that. This sadhana itself will become a vedana. Vedana means pain. Sadhana itself will become a pain at the end. That is why do more sadhana we say. Reason is this. If you keep on doing sadhana, it will become a pain at the end. It will become a vedana at the end. And you will feel like leaving everything. You had enough of everything. So, so naturally, towards your attitude towards all other karmam also will become a little bit, you will become very cool towards other things. Isn't it? And when you leave all your external karmam and all other karmam what you have done on your own, like karmam what you are forced upon you by the external world, and your own karmam what you are doing on your own accord, if you leave all these things completely, then shanti will come to the mind, a peace will come to the mind. So that is why vihita karmam is as spoken in the Vedam. And now, this is all there in the Shastra. All these things are there in the Shastra. Now, does that mean that only if you go through this way that you will realize the truth? Krishna saying no. People who have not gone through all these things have also become realized, have also realized the truth. So there is no firm rule that you have to go through all this. This is a general rule, what is spoken here. It's a general rule. And it is in this system that sampradayam all comes, all the sampradayas, that's all come through this process. But, so that idea is that you don't remain one-sided. You don't remain one-sided. So, parambara, through parambara in a general level in this world, what happens? Based on that, Krishna has spoken all these things. But how one person is going to realize the truth, it is very difficult to say. It's very difficult to say how someone will get to realize the truth. Remember that person I was talking about in America, one lady, pilgrim, yeah. She didn't go through all karma yoga or anything, but experiences in life has opened up her eyes to withdraw from karma. And the quest for knowledge, and due to purva vasana, from previous life, she must have had that vasana in her, that very easily she progressed herself in this process. This is one example. And similarly, we have other examples also. For example, that Nisargadatta Maharaj, his example is another one. Ramana Maharshi is another case. Ramana Maharshi didn't study all Shastram previously. But due to that vasana from previous life, and due to that certain experiences in this life, it happened in life. It is after that realization, whatever he has spoken, it was all in line with the Upanishads, in line with the Shastram. That is how it is. But generally, all this Shastram is based on the Parambara system. That means, for ordinary people who are living in this world, to open up their eyes, the Shastram is spoken in this way. That does not mean that only through this way people will realize the truth. That misunderstanding also we have to take it out. So rishis have got this one good thing. They won't insist on anything. It has to be done like this, it has to be done like that. Or I don't need this, I don't need that. That is not their system. That is why in rishis, they did not believe in reformation. None of them are reformers. Have you noticed that? They never reformed the society. Nowadays, everybody says that, oh, you have to reform the society. And many, many people are reformers, they are called, isn't it? In rishis, sages never believed in reformation. They never believed in reformation. Because the person who does reformation, what he does normally is, he will destroy even what is there because of reformation. Sometimes that happens also. So in the Vedic tradition, reformation doesn't exist. Vedas doesn't reform anybody. Reformation is not a process in the Vedic tradition. All other traditions have got reformers. They come and they try to reform the society, and then they go and their reformation also gone with that. Whereas Vedic tradition doesn't accept that. They say there is no reformation necessary. People are on their own. They are. What is required is this knowledge has to go in. And once the knowledge goes in, naturally the self within is capable of showing its bliss outside. So, therefore they say, Rishi says, that reformers are actually half-cooked grain. They are not fully cooked, they are half-cooked, in other words. And their knowledge is half-baked knowledge. And so proper, one who has proper knowledge, one who has proper realization, he will elevate anybody in this world without considering for background of that person. He will elevate anyone. Because as far as he is concerned, he will not tell anyone that here is something new knowledge I have brought for you. He will never say like that. He will never say that I brought some new knowledge for you. What he's saying here is that wherever it may be in this world, in whatever sampradayam you are talking about, it is possible to realize the truth, irrespective of which background or which country or which culture you were born, realizing the truth is concerned, nothing is an obstacle. That is the point Krishna is making here. Because the truth is something right now, here you have to realize. Right now, here you have to realize. As we said, Krishna is concerned, there is no delay at all. Because this truth, Atma, inside is full of knowledge, full of bliss. It is not experienced at the moment. That is due to lack of Chitta Shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi is not there. Purification, that's the only problem. Krishna says here, if you are ready for that, it is available. It is available right now. And it is available all the time, and you are that truth. You are that truth. Wherever you may be, if the jignyasa is there, inquisitiveness is there, then it is possible to realize the truth. It's possible to realize the truth. In Mahabharatam, there is this famous story. It's a very famous story. Mentioned this also before. That there's a personality called Dharmavyatha. Remember? Dharmavyatha was a butcher. So, one Brahmana, Kaushika Brahmana, he belonged to Kaushika Gotram. This Kaushika Brahmana, he went and performed a severe austerities and penances. Tapasya. He performed severe austerity. So, austerities and penances, you will get siddhis. Siddhis means mystic powers. Through austerities and penances, you will get mystic powers. You won't get knowledge. This is one thing to notice. Through austerities and penances, you will get mystic powers. You won't get knowledge. So this Kaushika Brahmana, he was performing very severe austerities and penances. And one day, he was sitting underneath the tree. A crow came and sat on top of a branch on where he was sitting. And then crow passed the stool on top of his head. And the bird flew off. He was in his meditation. This Brahmana was in his meditation. This story comes in Mahabharatam. It comes in Yoga Vasishtam also. The bird flew off from there. Brahmana got so angry at that time. He looked at that bird. And the bird fell down on the ground, fully burnt into ashes, just by looking at the bird. That siddhi had come to him by now because of the austerities there. So he thought, this is not bad. If I look at anyone, they are burning into ashes. So he left his village where he was living and went for begging for some food. Begging was a brahmachari naturally, went for begging for food. He went to one house and that mother who was in the house, he stood outside the house and asked for food. Three times you are supposed to ask, Bhikshamdehi, Bhikshamdehi, Bhikshamdehi. Three times he asked for the food. And he saw the mother inside the house. She didn't bring any food. She deliberately kept him waiting outside. She was not coming out with any food. And Brahmana was getting really angry now. He was thinking, if I just look at her and burnt her into ashes, like the way I did with the crow. He was hungry also. And he was thinking, why she? Because based on the Shastram, she should be attending to him first. It's a Brahmana, he has come for begging for food. Her husband was at home. So this lady was busy, mother was busy with her husband, looking after his needs. And after everything is finished, she decided to come and attend to him. She did this deliberately. She did this deliberately. When she came with the grains in the hand to give it to him, she looked at him, that, and she says to him, why do you look at me like this? She said, I'm not the crow who will die just by you looking at me. She says this to him. And that's how she started the conversation with him. As soon as he heard this, he thought, how did she come to know what happened miles away? when the crow got burned by my vision. And this is extraordinary. And he says to her, she says to him, that I brought food for you. My husband was at home. I had to attend to him and then give you the food. So you need had to wait. He says to her, that's all right. But how did you know that the crow got burned by my looking at it? She said like this to him, I am not a crow. I won't be burned down by your looking at me. That's how she started the conversation. So, and then she told him, if you want to know how I came to know about it, go to Benares. And there is one street in Benares which is full of butchers. They kill animals there and they cut the meat into pieces and they sell. It is the you can say, butcher street. Go there, and there is a person called Dharmavyadha there. Go and meet him, he will tell you, she said to him. And this Brahmana straightaway decided to go there. Brahmana was very hesitant, because for Brahmanas to go to a butcher means really hard for them inside, isn't it? So as he get closer to that street, butcher street, he felt like vomiting because of the smell of the blood and smell of the meat and bones and everything was putting him off. He didn't know how to go inside to the street because there's so many butchers there. They're all, you know, in the olden days how it was. Nowadays everything is very polished, isn't it? Even nicely packed in polythene bags, it comes in the Sainsbury's, we don't know where it's made, what is done. So it's so different. But in them days everything was open. They had a huge wooden blocks on that they will keep the animal and they'll cut them into pieces and openly sold in the market. So this Brahmana was finding it difficult to go in and he stood outside the street and he asked some people, is there someone called Dharmavyadha here? He said. So somebody told him, look, go inside that street, that is that shop, Dharmavyadha shop, he's there, you can go and see him, he said. Holding his nose like this, he walked through the street to see this person, Dharmavyadha. As soon as he got there, Dharmavyadha says to him, did that householder lady from that house send you here? Again he was in another shock. He had already had a shock there with the lady. And now Dharmavyadha asked this question, did he send you here? He said, the Brahmana said yes. So Brahmana said, I just want to know the secret of this, he said. Dharmavyadha says, I have a little few more things to do here. After finishing this, I'll take you home and then I'll explain to you everything, he said. So Dharmavyadha kept him for some time in the shop, let him experience what my karma is. This is Dharmavyadha's thinking. Brahmana is thinking, I don't do all this, is all dirty jobs and this and that. No, Dharmavyadha says, let him see what it is, karma means. He has to do such a karma. And Dharmavyadha, after a while, closed his shop and then took the Brahmana and went home. And then Dharmavyadha instructed this Brahmana of the knowledge of the self. And the Vasishtam says like this. Krishna quotes Dharmavyadha in the Ekadasha Skandam. You may have noticed earlier. So what does that indicate? That means that all the Shastram rules, regulations, everything, it is a general thing for those who have coming to spiritual life for them to get some guidance. That does not exclude exceptional cases like Dharmavyadha. Dharmavyadha is an exceptional case, isn't it? That by his karmam, he happened to be a butcher. Because that was then the system. Traditionally, whatever you were born, you were introduced into it. Your parents did the same thing, their parents did the same thing. You do the same thing. And that is not considered sinful. But Dharmavyadha had the knowledge inside of the soul. So even though he had to execute a karmam like butcher's karmam, inside is knowledge of the self. Inside is knowledge. This is also another example to tell us, in Vyavaharam, we may have a lot of problems. That should not enter inside in our knowledge of the self. These are two independent things. You can't bring Vyavaharam and mix it with the Tattvajnanam inside. Remember this? Tattvava Marshena Sahamanandi, says who? Jadabharata, to whom? Rahugana. He says, Vyavaharam, so many things will happen in life. What will happen, nobody knows. Today we are sitting here. Tomorrow what will happen? Who knows? Some volcano will come or some bomb will blast somewhere. Whether it is in the family or it is in the society or anything can happen. And all of us could be thrown out in that process, isn't it? But again, it's all vyavaharam. In the vyavaharam level, anything can happen. But Dharma Vyada's knowledge was such that he never allowed that vyavaharam to disturb his knowledge inside. This is spiritual life. Inside knowledge, outside vyavaharam. So Dharma Vyada lived like that. It mentions here that this is the secret of dharma. When Dharma Vyada said that Brahmana paid his obeisances to Dharma Vyada, Krishna quotes that Dharma Vyada as an example of a person who realized the self in the Srimad Bhagavatam through satsangam. He says like that. So here you can see that he says to him, after giving instructions to the Brahmana, Dharma Vyada says to him, you go home now. Look after your old parents, father and mother, and live at home and reflect on this, he said. And in that way, you will realize the truth, he says to Dharma Vyada. So why you run around all over the world like this? In this way, Dharma Vyada instructed him. So now, the problem is, suppose you have heard this story. Somebody will say, if that is the case, I have to kill animals and start, I have to take the job of a butcher to realize the self. If you start interpreting like this, then what will happen? This is how things get interpreted in the society, isn't it? You will hear a story like this and somebody will say to you that, in order to become self-realized, you have to start become a butcher, to do a butcher's profession. You'll start like that. That is an extreme example. It's an extreme example. That means if your destiny, if your fate or prarabdham is that bad, then even if it is like that, even if your destiny is like that, that your prarabdham is like that, you have been put into an awkward situation like that. Even in that state, suppose you are matured spiritually, you will be able to realize the truth. That is the point Krishna is making. It does not matter in which situation we were born. It doesn't matter. Krishna says, if you become matured spiritually, that means on your own accord, you are looking for the truth, to realize the truth. It is possible to realize the self, no matter in what occupation or profession you are stuck in this world. That is the point. So similarly, Krishna has given an example in the Bhagavad Gita. I don't know whether you have noticed this, that a person who is going to realize the self, if that person has to kill a lot of people, it doesn't matter, he said. Talking about Arjuna. He's saying to Arjuna, just because you're going to kill a lot of people, that doesn't mean that you're not going to realize the self. It is possible, he says, if your destiny, or if your destiny is, or your fate, or prarabdham is that, you have to fight this war and kill all these people, then you have to kill them. But that is not going to come on your way in your self-realization. That's the point, very important point. Krishna is saying to Arjuna. You look at the 18th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna puts it to Arjuna. Eighteenth chapter, 17th verse. See what Krishna says there. Yasya nahankrudo bhavo buddhir yasya na lipyade hatvapi sa imam lokan na hanti na nipatyade. That is that verse saying. It is this verse what is explained in that story. Dharmavyatha's story is this verse. It's also the story of Arjuna. Arjuna had to kill. He had no choice, isn't it? Arjuna had to kill. He had to fight. He had to kill. Krishna is saying here, Yasya nahankrudo bhavo. If you are telling me that you won't kill, that's your ego. That's what Krishna puts it. It's your ego that is telling me that you won't kill. And due to that ego, buddhir yasya nalipyate. That means your intelligence is polluted by your ego. And if your intelligence is one whose intelligence is not polluted by his ego, then hatvabisa imam lokan. Even if you kill some people, he is not killed anybody. He has not killed anybody. No, na handi na nipadyade. He has not killed anybody. He is not bound by anything. This is the law. This is the law. So you can see the difficulty. Normally we say we shouldn't kill anybody. Is it not? We shouldn't kill anybody. We should not be violent. We shouldn't kill anybody. We shouldn't give pain to any other living entity. We say all these things. And Krishna is saying here to Arjuna that if because of those understanding, if you are not willing to fight, yasya na ahankrito bhavo buddhir yasya na lipyate. That means your occupation you cannot give up because in the name, sometimes people are frightened. Suppose you have been thrown at some work which you can't help. It has come to you, that's what Prarabdham has given to you. And you are saying, oh, my religion doesn't allow all these things, so I'm not willing to do the work. Krishna says, no. You have to do it because that's what has come to you. You have to do that work, not to throw away work. At the same time, understanding this principle, what Krishna is saying in this verse, hatvabina nibadhyade, that he is not killing, he is not bound by that, because he is doing his sodharma. Dharma means executed in that way. And such a person, he can be realized. He can realize the self and he will not be bound by that. Now, after reading that, if you start interpreting it like this way, that, oh, if you have to become self-realized, you have to kill a few people before, if you start interpreting it that way, that will not look very right, is it? So the same problem there also. So if your prarabdham or niyati or destiny, what is it called, and situation that has happened in life, and often we criticize our environment or circumstances, isn't it? Krishna says that is not, and you will ask the question, with all this going on, how can I take to spiritual life? We will make excuses in that way. Because I am working so many hours in a day, and my job is very demanding. I have to leave home very early. I come home very late in the evening. And so many excuses you may make in spiritual life. Krishna's point is, you can't make any excuse. No matter what it is, whatever karma, what we are doing in this world, right in the middle of all that, you have to realize yourself. That is the point, Krishna's point. Like Nisargadatta Maharaj, his occupation was making these beedis, isn't it? And he realized the self in the middle of all that. Dharmavyada was a butcher, he realized the self. Pingala was a prostitute, she realized the self. Why all these examples in the Bhagavadam? The reason is this, that self-realization and your occupation has no connection. Occupation is occupation. For maintaining the body, you have to do something. But realizing the self is independent, not to be linked with each other. Because otherwise what is happening is very often people are finding it very difficult to work in this world because of this. They are saying, I don't want to do this work, I don't want to do that work. And they want to shy away from everything, doing any work. That is not a good thing. That doesn't matter what work comes through in our life. That is the point Krishna is making here. This is the work destiny has brought to me. I'm taking up that work. Without any feeling, any hesitation, one has to take up that work. At the same time, knowledge of the self must develop within. Knowledge of the self doesn't come from the work. It comes from the... because if you don't execute the work, that karma vasana inside will not go, will not leave us. So we'll have a short break. It's late. Cheto darpanamarjanam bhavamaha davagni nirvavanam shreyakkaitava chandriga vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam Anandambudivardhanam pradivada purnamrada swadhanam sarvapna subhanam param vijayade Shri Krishna Sangirtanam Nam namagari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatrarpida nimida smaranena kala Eda adrisham dava kripa bhagavan mamabi durdaya medrisham iha janina nuraga Tranara vishuni jaina tarorabi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari Nathanam na janam na sundarim kavidamba jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shwari bhavadad bhaktirahi dugitvai Ainandadanu jakinkaram padidamam shame bhavambudau krabayatava padapangajastita duli sadrasham vichindayam Nayanam galadashrutharaya padanam gadgadiruddhaya gira Pulagair nijidam kadavabu tavam nama grahane bhavishyadi Yugaidam nameshena chakshusha pravishayidam Shunyayidam jagal sarvam govinda virahename Ashlaishyava padaradam finishtumam Adarshanam marmahadam karyotuva Yadha tadava vidudha dulambadav matprana nathastu nayeva nathara So, as we mentioned in the beginning that this whole chapter is spoken about for those who have not taken spiritual life seriously. That means neither Jnana Yogam, nor Karma Yogam, nor Bhakti Yogam, but rather absorbed in the world unlimitedly, wants to enjoy the senses. Krishna said that these rules and regulations must be there for them. For them, rules and regulations must be there. And Krishna also said in these verses about the importance of karmakandam, that karmakandam creates all problems, but at the same time karmakandam leads to chitta shuddhi, which is more important thing, purification of one's inside, chitta shuddhi. And that is in this, that connection Krishna has spoken, that chitta shuddhi is more important than self-realization. Self-realization, Krishna says, is not difficult if chitta shuddhi has happened. It is chitta shuddhi that is causing all the problem. That is what is taking time in our spiritual life. This chitta shuddhi is the one that's taking time, not self-realization. Self-realization, Krishna says, if chitta shuddhi is very good, or if you have become, that is what is called pakvada, maturity in spiritual life. Spiritual maturity means that inside you are become pure. And that can happen through various ways. Just like as I mentioned, sometimes through a sudden stroke of some heavy disaster in life, you will lose all interest in the world, interest in the karmam, interest in the enjoyment. Everything will go in one lot, one stroke. An experience in life like that, it can happen. It can also happen through this process of knowledge cultivation through shastram. In that way, hearing that way, vairagyam can come and knowledge can come. That can happen in that way. The other alternative is that you may try very hard and eventually you will get disappointed with all your desires and you may give it up finally once for all. Ultimately, the result is the same. That desire has to go from within. So after saying that, Krishna himself mentioned this, that all this karmakandam in the Vedam is with this intention. For what intention? To create chitta shuddhi inside. Veda karmakandam in the Vedam is spoken only with this purpose, to create chitta shuddhi in a person. And it also mentions there, chitta shuddhi means, what it means is, that the person, preparing the person for hearing, Vedanta Shravanam, that alertness inside, to create that alertness inside. So that when you hear, when it's spoken the truth by the Acharya, by a self-realized soul, it goes directly to the heart. It goes directly to the heart. That is the purpose. That is why you will see in Viveka Chudamani, if you look, there is a verse there, that is 181 verse number. Tanmana shodhanam karyam prayatnena mumukshuna vishuddhe sadi chaidasmin mukti karabhalayate. He
he says. That tanmanashodhanam karyam prayatnena mamukshuna. This person who is looking for liberation, he should carefully purify his own mind, says. Tanmanashodhanam karyam prayatnena mamukshuna. Vishuddhe sadi chaitasmin mukti karabhalayate. And when this is purified, liberation is available for him, just like you give a fruit in the hand. Mukti karabhalayate, he says. So from this you can understand that actual problem is not shastram. Actual problem is not the self-realization. The knowledge of the self is not so complicated. What is complicated is this purification inside of our existence, chitta shuddhi. And that is why Krishna is saying that purifying one's own mind requires a lot of time. It's an ongoing process for a very long time, that inside purification of the mind. And purpose of all that is, after that, when you hear the truth from the Shastram, Upanishads, that knowledge will have its immediate impact on the person. Immediate impact on the person. So therefore, karma becomes important. Because when you don't execute the karma, shuddhi won't happen, purification won't happen. That in the karma, that karma has come through prarabdham. If I threw away all the karma and try to escape from that, Krishna says, no, that is also not possible. Whatever karma, that is why Krishna is using the example of Arjuna. Dharma Vyada story we have seen. Equally important Arjuna story, isn't it? Not big difference. Dharma Vyada was killing the animals for his livelihood. Arjuna had to kill the army for the livelihood. So Arjuna also had to do the same thing. Killing is the main thing, both. Either Dharma Vyada or Arjuna has to kill both. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, that verse you can see in the 18th chapter, that hitva bina nibadhyade. You are not bound. If you have to kill, you have to kill. If that is your job, you have to kill. You can't escape from that. But to throw it away and walk away from that is not yoga, Krishna says. Whereas if you do that, you are not bound. You are not bound by that. So why Arjuna's example in the Bhagavad Gita? Because in a place like battlefield, where it is the most difficult place to practice spiritual life, isn't it? Where extreme circumstances, that is, you're fighting there. In the middle of that, if you can live by the principles of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's question to us, is that not possible in your normal life in this world? Which is a reasonable question, isn't it? We say Bhagavad Gita is very difficult in our life because our job is not right, our this is not right. Krishna is saying, if a person like Arjuna, right in the middle of battlefield, if he has to fight the war and then follow Bhagavad Gita with that, what is the problem in your life? Krishna's question to us. If you are cooking in the kitchen or if you are working in an office, where is the difficulty in following Bhagavad Gita? That is Krishna's question here. So here you can see that important thing is that acquiring this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and bringing that into life, one's own life, is more important than anything else. Spiritual master and other things is secondary. We think that spiritual master is the first thing, isn't it? No. All this knowledge and its practical application in life is more important. And at the right time in life, when it is necessary, it is Krishna's responsibility to send the right person for the instructions. But we have to prepare ourselves for spiritual life and to be absorbed in this knowledge of what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavadam. And that recognition from inside, it will come. That we don't need recognition from outside. From Andaryami inside, we'll recognize that you are following Krishna's words seriously in life. So wherever Krishna has put us in life, according to our prarabdham, there you have to realize the truth, in that particular situation where you have been put into. Tushara karavimbacham manoyasya niragulam maranolsava yuddeshu sashandim iti katyate, says that in the case of Janaka, King Janaka, that is what he said, Ashtavakra and Janaka's discussion.
Tushara karabimbacham manoyasya nirakulam. A person who is self-realized, his state is explaining there. That like a full moon in the sky, like that your mind is so cool inside. And maranolsava yuddheshu, whether there is a death happens at home, whether there is a festival happens at home, or whether there is a war going on, doesn't matter. In all these three states, his mind is still undisturbed. Maranolsava yuddheshu sashandim idi kathyade. Sashandim idi kathyade. He is still peaceful. He is still peaceful. Because Krishna is explaining that a person who has realized the truth, he has gone beyond the modes of nature. He's gone beyond the modes of nature. No emotions and anything can have any effect on him anymore. He has transcended everything. Transcended the mind, transcended the intelligence as well. So the result of knowledge is what? What is the result of the knowledge? Result of the knowledge is this shanti, peacefulness, perfection, or this happy situation, prasannata. Krishna calls it like that. And in order to do that happen inside us, jijnyasa has to build up. Jijnyasa means inquisitiveness has to come up, and chitta shuddhi has to be there. So the purpose of Vedam is knowledge of the self, not engaging in karma. That is not the purpose of the Vedam. But karma also, Vedam has spoken about it, and the purpose of all these injunctions in the Vedam, ajaram, anushtanam, all kinds of Vedic injunctions, and also the purpose of the karmakandam in the Vedam is only one thing, ultimately to generate that inquisitiveness inside a person, brahma jijnyasa in a person, to generate that. For that purpose, all these things are there. Karmakandam, as well as the different injunctions, what they have, we have discussed in this chapter. Purpose of all that, Krishna is saying, is ultimately, the ultimate goal of all that is to create that inquisitiveness inside, inquiry inside, self-inquiry inside, Krishna says. So that is Krishna saying here in the 35th verse, you will see there that Vedam, Krishna says, Vedam Brahmalpa Vishayam. Trikanda Vishaya Ime, Parocha Vado Krishayam, Parocham Mamaja Priyam. This is a very important verse in the Bhagavadam. Then, a lot of other things Krishna has spoken in that chapter, which is all related to this intelligence of those people who are following the Karma Kandam and their attitude in life and things like that. They are not of much of a significance. But we'll come to this particular verse Krishna says here, that Vedam Brahmalpa Vishayam Trikanda Vishaya Ime Parocha Vado Krishayam Parocham Mamaja Priyam. There is a verse like that you can see there. He says that Parocham Mamaja Priyam. Krishna is saying here, Vedam has only one message to us. What is that? The message is this, that Brahmalpa Vishaya Striganda Vishaya Ime. Jivalpa and Paramalpa is one. Jivalpa and Paramalpa is one. And that identity of the Jivalpa with Paramalpa, Vedam has spoken all these things. So, the mother, Vedam is considered to be like a mother, Shruti. Shruti is a mother, isn't it? Shruti Mata. She is considered to be a mother. She has only one goal in life. What's that goal? To create knowledge of the self in us. Shruti Mata, her only goal is to create Brahma Jnanam, Brahma Vidya in us. And after realizing that self, if you throw away Vedam, Vedam has no objection. Purpose is done, that's it. Purpose is to realize the self. Vedam has only one goal, to make us realize the truth. Self-realization, in other words. After realizing the self, if you throw the Vedas away, Vedam has no objection. Vedam has no objection to it. And the question is that because after that you don't need Vedam, there is no use of Vedam after that. And if you haven't got the knowledge of the self, what's the use of having the Vedam? That's what Krishna is saying. After you got the knowledge of the self, you can throw the Vedam away. Vedam is not bothered about anything. Once you got the knowledge, you don't need the Vedam. You don't need the Vedic literature. We're talking about Vedam means Vedic literature. After you have realized the self, you don't need the Vedic literature. If you have not realized the self, then what is the use of Vedic literature? Krishna is saying. Vedam, Brahmalpa Vishayam, Triganda Vishaya Ime, Parochavado Vishayam, Parochanja Mama Priyam. That is the way Krishna is saying here, that knowledge of the Vedam is, knowledge of purpose of the Vedam is knowledge, knowledge of the self. And for that purpose alone, you have to study Vedam. And in order to understand Shastram, while studying the Vedam, while studying the Shastram, or to understand that, for that purpose, this do's and don'ts, Vidhi Nishedham, is spoken. All that Vidhi Nishedham is to purify us. And sometimes it may purify, sometimes it may make you impure also. Because it can make you impure also, this Vedic knowledge. How? It is like this. After following all these rules and regulations, sometimes people become very proud. I am following all the rules and regulations, all the injunctions very strictly, and they become very proud. This happens. This also happens even among the Brahminical community. They become, and in that case, you have become impure. You have become impure. In other words, while applying all these rules and regulations, because some people, they're very strict in their acharam, in their practice, isn't it? Some people follow very strictly. And you will see a pride in them. Oh, I'm following everything very strictly. I only take prasadam. I bathe every day, three times a day. And I'm very fixed up in spiritual life. Like this, a kind of ego builds up inside. Krishna is pointing out that people can, ego can come from anywhere, in any situation, isn't it? Once, a very wealthy lady, she got very sick. So, one person who was known to her, he went up to her in a very sympathetic way. He said to her, "Oh, I heard that you were very sick. I was sorry to hear like that," he said to her. You know what she said? She said, "It's a disease what rich people get." This was the answer from her. So she is sick, and this is the ego inside. She says, "This is the type of sickness which rich people get." And that person didn't ask anything further, walked away from there. This is the world. Ahankaram, false ego, where it will turn out, you don't know. You're following all the Vedic injunctions, everything, and that itself make you one day egoistic. Your ego gets boosted by that. That I'm following everything very strictly. I am this, I am that, and all kinds of things. Ego builds up like that. It happens in all the time, in all kinds of things. So, so where pride will come, very difficult to say. Very difficult to say. So, in karmam, particularly in karmam, pride will come. Abhimanam will come. I've done it very well. I'm good at it. And similarly, in your karmam it can come. In your daily practice it can come. Anushtanam. In your anushtanam, Abhimanam can come, isn't it? But yagam, big sacrifices, yajnam, and all that things, all these things are meant for purifying us. It is meant for purifying us. In other words, it's a kind of a de-addiction. We have got addiction to various things, isn't it? Even in spiritual life, it happens like this. So that is why Krishna is saying here that all these injunctions, Vedam Brahmalpa Vishayam Trikanda Vishaya Ime Parokshavado Krishayam Paroksham Mamacha Priyam. That's a very nice verse. the understanding is this. Krishna is saying here that people have a desire to eat meat. Desire to eat meat. So what does Vedam say? Vedam says, you perform sacrifice, you can kill the animal and you can eat that meat. Vedam put an injunction there also. You can't just freely kill animals and eat them, but bring the animal, kill them in a sacrifice, and you make it as a sacrifice. In that sacrifice you can kill them. And purpose of all that is, if you put a lot of restrictions, that before you eat meat, you have to go through a lot of these procedures and sacrifices and everything, little by little you will become hesitant. You will say, okay, let me say as a vegetarian, and you will pull out of eating meat, isn't it? So that will come in that way. So putting rules and regulations like this in everything. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam, if you look, we have talked about that before, in the 5th chapter, Navayogi Nimi Samvadam, 11.5, where he says, it is the 11th verse, Loke Vivayam Shamadhya Seva Nityastu Jandor Nahidatra Chodana Vivastidisteshu Vivahayatyam Suragrahai Asu Nivrtirishtaha. That is that verse. Loke Vivayamisha Madhya Seva. Amisham means meat. Madhya means alcohol. These things are there. That means desire to eat meat, desire to drink alcohol, desire for sex life. These things are there in us, all of us. According to our desires, it will come out, isn't it? Meat eating, alcohol, intoxication, sex. All these things, desires, is within everyone. What is the reason? Because we have gone through so many different bodies before. Animals' bodies. There, this is the only thing that's happening, isn't it? All these eating, sleeping, mating, this is going on all the time in different bodies. And that vasana has followed us in this life also. That's where it has come. And because it is there, overnight to stop it is difficult. So therefore what Vedam has done, Vedam says, if you want to eat animals, then these are the rules. You follow these rules. Kill the animal under these conditions. Amisham. Then you can... So Vedam has put there also some injunctions. Made it difficult for you that you don't freely kill animals, but under certain conditions you can kill an animal, and you can have that on a particular day, in a particular time in the month, and a lot of restrictions attached to it, and not all animals, certain animals, and after chanting all the mantras, and one of the mantras says, I am killing you in this life, in next life you can kill me. This is one of the mantras to discourage you from killing, because if you keep on chanting the mantra, one day you will start thinking about it. I am killing so many. This is what happened to Prachina Brahis in the fourth canto. He had kept on doing this, Karma Yogam, Karmagandam for a long time. One day Narada Maharshi came and told him that you have killed all these animals. Touch me and look at them, the amount of animals you have killed. And when Prachina Brahis touched Narada Maharshi and looked, he could see a number of animals whom he has killed in the sacrifice. And all of them were ready with their horns covered in the steel cappings, and they are ready to pierce him and kill him. Narada Maharshi says to Prachina Brahis, they are all waiting there for you to come. And they get the opportunity, they will kill you and eat you because you have killed them. When he heard, Prachina Brahis says to Narada Maharshi, my acharyas never told me any of these things. He says, yeah, well, that's their fault. I can't do anything about it. But at least now you become conscious and give up this karmagandam, and brings him out of karmagandam from that. And then Prachina Brahis heard Piranjanobhakhyanam, and he understood that, and then left everything, went to the forest, performed penances, and left this world. So in the same way, what happened to Prachina Brahis, and we will see later with the island, Pururava story, there also you will see that these desires are in us, and sometimes it is excessive because somehow some vasana has grown very strongly inside, whether it is meat eating, whether it is intoxication, whether it is sex life, it doesn't matter. Some of these vasanas can be very strong inside and they won't go easily. So therefore, Vedam has put some conditions and thrown at us that you can do all these things and have it. If you want to drink alcohol, you can drink. But you have to do in this particular way, Vedam instructs. That it mentions like this, that Sautramani, a sacrifice you have to perform. Sautramani is a sacrifice, and then you can drink. Don't just go into the pub and drink, it says. It says, you can have drink, but perform this sacrifice, Sautramani first. And in that Sautramani, you can drink. It says. And similarly, marriage, sex life, sex desire is inside. If it is there so strongly, Krishna says, get married and you can have sex relationship, but take up the burden also on your shoulders for the rest of the life. Suffer from that also. If you are willing to do all that, you can get married. There's no problem. Nothing is stopped, he said. Because vasana is there inside, it won't go. What can be done? So Krishna, that is why Krishna is saying here that loge vivayamisham adya seva nityastu jandor nahi tatra chodana. You know what that means? Nahi tatra chodana means? Nahi tatra chodana means without anybody telling you, this vasana comes out. Nobody has to tell you that to drink alcohol. From inside that desire will come. Although we may say that it is due to association and all that. It's only not only due to association. Inside vasana was there that I want to drink. I want to enjoy through alcohol. Or I want to enjoy the eating the meat. Same thing, the sex life also. So those desires are already inside there. Only thing is when you got the association, it came out properly at that right time. So that is what Shastram is, now yogis are saying here, Loge vivayamisham adya seva nityastu jandor nahi tatra chodana. Nobody has to teach anyone to drink, to eat meat, to have sex. That is already there in that person, inside us, vasanas. But what Krishna, they have done, Vedam has done is vevasthidisteshu, it has created a vevastha, as a kind of regulation for that, a standard. And vivahayatyam, for the sake of sex life, you get married. Perform what is known as the marriage and marriage which is considered vivaha yajnam asayajnam and suragrahai asu nivritti reshta. In this way, you come out of your desires. You come out of your desires in this way. Now yogis are saying like that. Who spoke? This is Chamasa has spoken. Chamasa Maharshi has said this. That this verse is from Chamasa Maharshi. Chamasa Maharshi says like this. So there you can see that and that is what Krishna is saying also here. Whole of karma gandam is like that, to get you out of karma. To get you out of karma. These three things, examples, meat eating, intoxication and sex life, is what Chamasa Maharshi has spoken. Krishna is saying here in this verse, all karma gandam is for this purpose, to get you out of karma. The karma vasana inside, to get you free from that, for that purpose it has been spoken. So these things are not in the nature. For example, you can see that if you look into material nature, there are other species here, isn't it? Other living entities, like elephants, like the cows, dogs, they don't have an elaborate arrangement like the marriage. Do they get married, giving marriage invitation and all that? When they get married, they don't print marriage invitation, invite everybody, there's a big feast and all sorts of fire sacrifice, nothing. They're also getting married. But they don't have any of these things, isn't it? Or they keep a welcome board, whoever is coming for the marriage. So then, but now people are asking, why do we need marriages? People are asking that also. What do we need? So answer that, okay, if you don't want it, what can be said about that? So Krishna says, point Krishna is making here is that, okay, if you don't want it, don't have it, wander around whichever way you like it and see if you have become happy after that, all that, he says. So anyway, rishis are saying to us, these things are not the goal. What the point is, Krishna is saying here, that rishis have given a rule like this. They have put this rule of marriage and said that a system like this, a man get married to a woman and somehow feel live peacefully in this world so that they can execute their spiritual life and realize the truth. So now the thing is this, problem in the modern world today is this, that we did everything, got married, and then they are saying, I didn't like him, he didn't like, she says, I don't like her. So what to do then? Then they are saying, we'll break this marriage, we'll have a divorce, we'll try another one, we'll go and get married to somebody else. She also says, we'll get married somebody else. The question is this, you can marry 100 times, it's all going to be like this only. Nothing is going to be different. So, keep on getting married and finally you will realize that I didn't want this prarabdham anymore. You'll come to that conclusion. So, whichever way it is, you transcend your prarabdham. That's the main thing. Goal is self-realization, not all these things. That is the important thing, message. These things, now what has happened is that we come to this Vedic culture and we started saying that marriage is the most important thing. Spiritual institutions are busy in organizing marriages. Can you see the fun behind it? And we are saying that, oh no, no, marriage is a yajna mentioned in the Shastram. But it's not thinking what is the goal of spiritual life. And we are occupied with all kinds of ideas like this. And ultimately, this is all nivritti. Nivritti. To free yourself from that bondage, from that desire inside, for that marriage has been spoken about. And so whatever it is, important thing is to understand the principle behind it. Principle is this, Krishna is saying, Vedam has only one thing to tell us, to realize the truth, to realize the self. But because we have got a material body, we have got karma vasana inside, we have got prarabdham with us, you have to get through that in this body. Therefore, all these injunctions, what is spoken in the Vedam, beyond than that, they have no other importance. Beyond than that, they have no other importance. That's the point Krishna is making here. That as far as Krishna is concerned, because you have got prarabdha vasana inside, and you have got the prarabdham to go through that marriage, due to desires, whatever it may be, therefore, Vedam has allowed all that in a certain way, so that you don't transgress the rules of the society and make everything messy. And beyond that, it has no other importance. If you can go through your prarabdham without all these things, the best, the better than anything else. If you can do that, if you don't get into all this mess. But if you get into, Krishna is saying, it's only what you are doing is you are burning away your prarabdham. That's all it is. So, that is why Vedic literature doesn't even talk about marriage. In the Shruti, you don't find, Upanishads don't find anything talking about the Vedam. So, but why it has come into the Vedic tradition? Because it is a sampradayam, a discipline to bring into the society. Vedam has done that. So Vedam knows this, that rishis has found out after several years of research and through their austerities and penances, they have found out this. What should we do in such a way that there will be maximum peace in the society? Because peace is necessary to progress in the spiritual path. You've got to be peaceful in life, isn't it? If you are not peaceful, it's not possible to develop spiritual knowledge, spiritual realization. If you are very disturbed inside, spiritual life also becomes very disturbed. So therefore the rishis found out how, by what arrangements necessary in life so that the person lives peacefully at home with the family or children and then still he can remain in spiritual path. This was their objective behind it. So, and whichever way, maximum peace you can bring into life. Maximum peace. Maximum peace, not complete peace. They never said, you will never have complete peace in householder life. Never. You will never get a complete peace in householder life. That the rishis have already told us. They said maximum peace you can get if you follow these things. So, because in that plane of householder life, it is not possible. It is not possible. Because already, janmam mrityu jara vyadhi, it is there. And all other problems with our swabhavam, our nature. We all have different nature in us, isn't it? Therefore, it is impossible to live in peace and impossible to live in perfect peace. It is not possible. There will always be some tremors going on. So what is possible then? What can you do then? Rishis are saying to us, you will never have total peace in the family life. What can you do? Only some adjustments within the family life. Some adjustments, mutually you make it. In such a way that he says here, therefore all these instructions is meant for that. You have to also remember, all these instructions what are spoken in this 21st chapter is within Maya. Within Maya. And therefore, they cannot be perfect. They cannot be perfect. Whereas, knowledge of the self is not inside Maya. It's outside Maya. Therefore, it is perfect. Remember? If all the knowledge in this world, the only knowledge that is outside Maya is knowledge of the self. Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidya Pratishtham. All other knowledge is inferior compared to Brahma Vidya. The reason being, Brahma Vidya or spiritual knowledge is the only knowledge that is outside Maya. Every other knowledge is inside Maya. This Vidhi, Nishedham, Shuddhi, Ashuddhi, Ajaram, Anajaram, everything what is spoken in these chapters, what Krishna has spoken in this last chapter, is all within the periphery of Maya. That you have to remember. And therefore, Krishna is saying here, once you have come to spiritual life and you have become spiritually serious, you can throw this away. It doesn't matter. That is the point Krishna is making there. If tattva jitnyasa has happened, when does tattva jitnyasa comes? When chitta shuddhi comes. If chitta shuddhi has come, and if tattva jitnyasa has come, all these 21st chapter, you can bin it. It doesn't apply anymore. You see, based on the same principle, what Krishna is saying to us, that tattva jitnyasa comes because if you are ready for the knowledge, spiritual knowledge, if you are ready for self-realization, then you go beyond these injunctions. These do's and don'ts and all other things what we have spoken about, you have gone beyond than that. Provided tattva jitnyasa has come. This is the same thing if you look into Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying there. What does he say? If you look into the second chapter, Krishna says, everything in the Bhagavatam is nothing but an expansion of Bhagavad Gita's verses. But Bhagavad Gita is spoken only in a very limited, subtle way. In Bhagavatam, little bit more expanded on that. If you look into the second chapter, 45 verse, what does he say? Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunya bhava arjunam nirdando nitya sattvasto niryoga kshema almavan. Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunya bhava arjuna nirdando nitya sattvasto niryogam kshema almavan. This is what that verse is saying. It says here, Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. Krishna is saying there, Traigunni Vishayo Vedam. All these injunctions now, what we spoke about in the last chapter, is Traigunni Vishayo Vedam. Is Trigunam it is, three modes of material nature. And therefore, because they belong to the Trigunam, Trigunam means what? Maya. Trigunam means Maya, isn't it? goodness, sattvam, rajasa, tamasa, goodness, passion and ignorance, three modes of material nature is called maya. All this discussion we had so far, yesterday, today is all, is topics within maya. Traigunya vishayo vedam. And Krishna is saying, nis traigunyo bhavarjuna. Arjuna, go beyond this trigunam. Nis traigunyo bhavarjuna. Then what happens? Nirdvando nitya sattvasto niryogam kshema almavan. Almavan, you become almavan, establish in the self. And then you are free from the dualities of this vidinishedam. Nirdvandam nitya sattvasto, that you have gone beyond all the modes of nature. Niryogam kshema almavan. Niryogam, you come into the yoga state. You are in the yoga state, almavan. You are in the almavan state. So that is why the Vedam also talks about these three modes of material nature. Go beyond the three modes of nature. And if you want to be free, Krishna is saying here, go beyond all rules and regulations. Vedic injunctions are like that. That you go beyond all the injunctions, do's and don'ts and vidinishedam, he says here. And be situated in the self. Be situated in the self. And a person who has reached that stage, for him, then he doesn't require any sadhana anymore. He doesn't require any knowledge anymore. He doesn't require any karmam anymore. No karmam, no jnanam, no bhakti. Nothing is there for him to do. Because he is situated right on the top of the Vedic literature. He has acquired, he has realized everything what is in the Vedam. That means he is on the top position. So if he speaks anything, that is Vedam after that. Vak vivridasya vedaha. His words is Vedam, it says. So, so there are examples like this. So many people like this history, you will see people who have reached that stage. Jnaneshwar, you heard about Jnaneshwar. Jnaneshwar's life, if you read, you will see Jnaneshwari in the introduction also, you can read that Jnaneshwari. This Jnaneshwar, by the age of 16, he was fully realized himself. And one day, Jnaneshwar had gone to some Vedic scholars who were present at that time in that village, Alindi, I think, the river village was called. And in that village, these Vedic Brahmanas, they were chanting the Vedam without having any realization. They were experts in chanting the Vedic hymns. Jnaneshwar was a realized personality. When Jnaneshwar went there and approached them, because Jnaneshwar wanted some approval from them in his life, the Brahmanas refused due to some problem Jnaneshwar had with his birth. They would not accept him. A realized soul like Jnaneshwar has come and spoken to them, and these highly qualified Vedic Brahmanas, they rejected him. So they asked Jnaneshwar, Brahminical way, that what is your qualification in studying the Vedam? He said, I have studied the Vedam and I think I have understood it, what it means. So a Muslim was taking a buffalo along that way, and these Brahmanas wanted to make fun of Jnaneshwar. And they say to Jnaneshwar, that look at that buffalo that's going there. Can they chant Vedam? He says. Jnaneshwar says, yes, it can. If it wants, it can chant the Vedam. And Jnaneshwar started chanting the Vedam and the buffalo started chanting the Vedam. When Jnaneshwar was chanting, the buffalo also started chanting the Vedam. As soon as buffalo started chanting the Vedam, the person who was owning that buffalo, he got very upset. He started thinking, what's happening here? He left the buffalo there and he ran away from there, seeing the buffalo chanting the Vedam. The Brahmanas realized that Jnaneshwar is not an ordinary person. If you can make a buffalo to chant the Vedam, he must be someone extraordinary, isn't it? Why is the reason? Jnaneshwar has realized the Vedam. For him, Vedam, whatever he speaks is Vedam from now on. That is the way it is. So this is one incident in Jnaneshwar's life to show to us that after you have realized the truth, realized the self, after that, what Vedic literature? What does it mean? It means nothing for him. Another instance. There was among the Agnihotri's children, Narayanatu Brahman, a mad person he was. There was one, once they were installing the deity in a temple. So they have what they call, after the deity installation, they have the temple towers, huge towers at the temple. And those towers, they take a huge pots on top of that tower, and there will be abhishek from the top of the tower. Kumbhabhishekam they call it. Famous big old towers, ancient towers, temples, they'll do this. When they are performing this Kumbhabhishekam, if everything is done technically right, the brahmanas who are installed the deity, after they have installed the deity, they will address the deity by name and the deity will answer back. If you address the deity, this is the power of that brahmanas who installed the deity. It was the system in them days. You can see this if you read Madhura Meenakshi temple, the famous big temple. When Kallur brahmanas installed the deity, they called Meenakshi, and Meenakshi answered from inside. In that temple, Meenakshi and Sundareshwar, the two deities, Shiva and Parvati. Kallur brahmana installed the deity, and the king, Pandya king, who spent all the money in building that temple, was not convinced that Sri Parvati is there. He got the doubt. So he said to the brahmana, the Kallur brahmana who installed the deity, "How do you know that Sri Parvati has come here? Meenakshi has come." Kallur brahmana said to him, "You don't believe that our karma must have gone wrong somewhere?" King said, "I have no proof whether I do know that huge temple, massive temple they built." So Kallur says to king, "I will call her and she will answer. You see," he said. And he called Meenakshi, and Meenakshi said from inside, "What?" Meenakshi answered from the deity room, "What? Why are you calling me?" That was the way she answered from inside. And after that, the king was satisfied. So similarly, in this one particular, this was all like that in one time when the deity worship was done properly. Nowadays it's all different, isn't it? So people have lost that strength. That kind of qualified people are not there. Qualified kings are not there. Everything is more commercial now, isn't it? Anyway, doesn't matter. Whatever it is, at that time, Narayana Bhranthan had to go to one temple. When he went there, that the deity they install, but the deity is not staying, it is falling off from the installed place. Ultimately, this Narayanath Brahman came that way. And somebody said, call him, see what he says, who was there, present there, invited him to come. He came in and he was eating these betel leaves and betel nuts. You know, in those days people used to chew that, isn't it? So chewing all that, he spat it on the deity and told the deity, "You sit there," he said. And the deity sat. Deity sat down. A realized soul can do such things. For them, the shuddhi, ashuddhi and all. For us, something spitting is considered to be very impure, isn't it? We consider that as very dirty and all that. For him, no, it's not. Same person, he was walking. He used to wander around all over. Even now you can see there's a huge mountain in his name and a temple on his name. It's still there. When he was walking, somebody joined him. He told him, "I want to be your disciple," he said. He said, "I don't want any disciples," he said. So this disciple says to him, "No, at least give me some understanding of the soul." He said, "You join, come with me. Wherever I'm going, you come with me," he said. So they started walking. They kept on walking, and in one instance what happened was that somewhere they were melting this, what do they call it, bell metal, molten bell metal. You know how they do it? When they make these huge pots for cooking. In the olden days they won't cook in stainless steel or aluminium pots. They only will cook in this bell metal, heavy metal that is. And they make huge pots out of that. In that they will cook huge quantities of different preparations for the deity. And also if you have to cook for large number of people, you will use that heavy pots there, very heavy. And how do they make it? They have to cast it. That means you have got a dye and you melt this metal, which is a mixture of zinc, copper, tin, three things, and a certain percentage. They mix it together, and when it is boiling at a very high degree of temperature, the people, they do it, they know it, when to pour it into the dye. And then you cool it, and then it will come out in the form of the pot you wanted, isn't it? So it is a very complex work, in the sense that while doing it, you got to be very attentive, and at the right time, you have to pour it into the dye when you make it. So somewhere, while they were walking, this Narayan Brahman and his disciple, they were walking, and he was very casual, bit like our Jadavarada, not bothered what goes on in this world. He will eat anything, whatever is given. He will sleep wherever he likes. Sometimes he will dance. I told you that he used to drag huge stones whole day to the top of the hill, work whole day to bring it to the top, and in the evening 4 or 5 o'clock he will push it down from there, all the way from the top, and he will laugh happily when the stone coming down from the top. So if you ask him why you are doing that, he said, look, you are also doing the same thing throughout life. I'm only doing today, he said. Throughout life you are doing this, he said. So it is him, he said this, that he was walking with his disciple, suddenly in some place he noticed that they were boiling this metal and molten metal. They were all waiting to ready for the right time to pour it into the dye. He goes there and he says to them, I am very thirsty, I want something to drink, he said. So the chief of the foreman or whoever it is, the man who was in charge of this project there, he got angry because they were all waiting for the right temperature to lift the whole thing and pour it into the dye. When he asked for water to drink, they were not interested in giving him the water. They said to him, if you are very thirsty, you can take that and drink a little bit of that, he said. Which one? This boiling molten metal. So there was one coconut shell lying there. He took that coconut shell, went up to that, and this molten metal, which was a few hundred degrees centigrade boiling, he took that with the coconut shell and poured it into his mouth, drank it happily, without any problem. And then he told his disciple, you can also have a little bit of that, he said. So the disciple says to him, I don't want that. He says, then don't come with me, he said. You're not taking any of my instructions. I'm giving you spiritual instruction. I'm drinking this, you also drink that now. Disciple says, no, this is reality. So he says to him, if you don't want that, then don't come with me anymore, he said. Then, so disciple, this is, he was, the way he was approaching him, he says to him, that a jnani, a realized soul, whatever he does is authority. Is authority. There is no question. So you can't say anything about it. So the interesting thing here is, what you have to understand is this. This is only peculiar with Vedic culture, not with any other religion or philosophy. What Vedam is saying is, alone you are in this world. You are alone in this world. You follow the Vedic injunctions, and if anything happens after that, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because you have got the complete freedom to walk away from all these injunctions. If you realize the truth. This is beauty of the Vedic literature. Suppose you have realized the truth, you can walk out from this society. You are not bound by any rule, anything. Nothing is affecting you. You are not concerned at all. You don't have to be concerned at all. Normally it's not like that, isn't it? Rules and regulations are there. In every religion, there is rules and regulations. And you are supposed to follow that right up to the end. Vedic literature says, after you have realized the truth, you don't have to follow anything. You are not bound by anything. So, in the Sanatana Dharma, a person is given absolute freedom. Absolute freedom is given to him. But, the moment you have become two persons, you are not given any freedom. This is the difference. You see that difference? What it means? That on your own, you study Shastram, follow the rules and regulations, and finally you realize the truth. You can walk away from the rules and regulations. But if you are with another person, that means you come to a group or a society, even in two persons, then you have to follow the rules and regulations. There you can't act independently. This is the way Sanatana Dharma, Vedika Dharma is based on this principle. On your own, you can walk out from all the rules and regulations. But you can't take another person with you. You can't take another person with you. First of all, another person, if he has to stay with you, he has to stay within the framework of the law, of this Vijinishedam, all what Krishna has spoken, isn't it? But if you say, oh, another person has joined me, he also doesn't have to follow the rules and regulations, means no, that is not acceptable. If you have realized the truth, you can walk away. Nobody is going to question you. Jadabharata has done that, Dattatreya has done that, Rishabhadeva has done that, Shukabrahmarshi has done that, all of them have done that, and they are always alone. Have you noticed? And when they walk out, even if they have gone, given their grace, kripa, to somebody, they will not take them with them. They are on their own, always. After Parikshit got realized, Shukabrahmarshi didn't wait, did he? He walked away from there. He didn't say to Parikshit, now from now on, let's go together. No, alone, left him. Jadabharata, after Rahugana is realized, what did he say? Walked away, no more contact with him. And same thing to Rishabhadeva also. Same thing with Dattatreya Maharshi. You look at the Bhagavatam, you can see that. Once you are realized, then you can do what you want. You are not bound by any law. But if you take somebody with you together, then you are bound by all the rules, all the law. All rules. This is that fineness of the spiritual life, the fineness. That the rules and regulations has its place in spiritual life. And you know where to take it and where to leave it also. Otherwise, it's not good. That is what Krishna is saying here also. In this process, Krishna says that when you are with others, you have to follow the rules. When you are in a society also, when you are in a society, you have to follow the rules, isn't it? So it is only in that context that rishis have spoken about all these rules. They have spoken about all these rules. So when we are discussing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you have to keep this objective, the goal on the front, in the front. That means paramarthikam. Paramarthikam means absolute. Absolute goal is different. Only then you can act properly. That is why he says here, you will see in that verse, that, see the next verse, what Krishna says. Shabda Brahmam Sudurbhodham Pranendriyam Manomayam Anandaparam Gambhiram Durvigahyam Samudravat. That verse is referring to that. Very difficult verses they are. If you don't know the background of all these verses, you won't understand what is Krishna saying. Krishna is talking to Uddhava. Uddhava can understand because Krishna has given that capacity for... Krishna is saying to Uddhava, Shabda Brahmam Sudurbhodham Pranendriyam Manomayam Anandaparam Gambhiram Durvigahyam Samudravat. In the last verse, one before this, Krishna says, Parokshavado Hrishayam Hrishayaha Paroksham Mamacha Priyam. See that? Two lines in that verse. Parokshavada Hrishayam Paroksham Mamacha Priyam. What does that mean? Krishna is saying that rishis, the sages, when they speak everything indirectly. They never speak directly. So many things rishis have spoken, everything is spoken indirectly, never spoken directly. Parokshavado krishayam. Then what else Krishna is saying? Paroksham mamaja priyam. I also like it in that way. Whole spiritual Brahmavidya is paroksham. Paroksham. Nothing is spoken directly. Many things in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and all, this is why we are finding it difficult to understand it, isn't it? That because it's spoken paroksham. Paroksham means indirect. When something is spoken indirectly, then it is very difficult to understand what the message is. It's never spoken directly. Krishna is saying here, parokshavado krishayam, paroksham mamacha priyam. I also like it that way. Krishna also likes it that way. That is why all Vedic literature requires the help of the acharyas, the rishis, the sages, who have spoken. To read their mind is very, very difficult. By reading the literature directly, it is very, very difficult. But Krishna says, that's the way I like it. All Vedic literature are spoken in that way. Parocham mamacha priyam. I also like it that way. You will see the same thing spoken in two other places in the Bhagavadam. In the 11th canto, while Niminavayogi Samvadam is spoken, there also it's spoken in the same way. Paroksham. In the Puranjana Ubhakhyanam, it's also paroksham. That whole story of Puranjana is paroksham, isn't it? The message of the story is different. Prachina Barhis met Sri Narada Maharshi. Narada Maharshi told Prachina Barhis the story of Puranjana in 5 chapters. After hearing all the 5 chapters, Prachina Barhi says to Narada Maharshi, I can't understand the head and tail of this story, what you have told me. A very funny story that is, isn't it? If you remember, Puranjana Vakyanam in the Bhagavadam, that's 5 chapters, 4th canto. After hearing the story, the story is like this, very small, in a very subtle way, in a very summarized way. A person goes over the Himalayas, goes to the other side. To the south side of Himalaya, it means Bharatavarsham, he is saying. There, he is wandering, he is looking around, a very beautiful garden everywhere, a nice palace. And from inside the palace, a beautiful woman has come out. And she is so beautiful. And there was a 9-headed serpent, like a minister, walking with this beautiful lady who came out of the house. And there were also other assistants. The lady asked this person, who are you? He asked her, who are you? They say, let's get married and live happily. And they got married. This is the story. Puranjana Vakyanam story is like this. They got married. After they got married, they lived very, very happy. And both of them were like so close to each other. If she doesn't eat, he won't eat. If she doesn't bathe, he won't bathe. If they, so close they were in everything they did together, in so many ways, Puranjana and Puranjani, Bhagavadam says like that. That's his name, that's her name. Puranjana is his name. So she asked him, what's your name? He says, my name is Puranjana. So he asked her, what is your name? She says, I am Puranjani, he says. So like this they got married. And their happy married life, everything. Finally he got old and Gandharvas attacked him. 360 Gandharvas came, actually 720, 360 and 360, 720 came, and some of them were dark and some of them were white, and the day and night is referring to that. And they attacked, and his body, what it means is, due to attack of time, he got old and the body became old. And finally Puranjani said goodbye and left one day. All this story, it's a whole story, 5 chapters it is in the Bhagavadam. After hearing the whole story, Prachina Barhi says to Narada Maharshi, I never heard a story like this before. He says, never I have heard a story like this. And I have not understood this story also. And then in 2 chapters, Narada Maharshi has to tell the secret of all the story to him. Why? Because it was paroksham. Paroksham. Paroksham, the story was spoken. So, therefore, Narada Maharshi has to give the message to Prajina Barhis, the story's actual meaning, what it means. So there also, Krishna is saying there, Sri Narada Maharshi says there, Krishna is very fond of speaking things in a paroksham, indirect way. Here also, Krishna is saying like this, paroksha vado krishayam. Sages are also like that. And paroksham mamaja priyam. I also like it that way. All spiritual topics are discussed in paroksham. It's always spoken in paroksham. Parakshavado vedoyam balanam anushasanam. You will see in the Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, words like that. All Vedam is parokshavadam. Paroksham it is, indirect it is. And why? Because the reason is this, that balanam anushasanam. That when you are instructing children, children means here, we are all children in spiritual life. We are children in spiritual life. Why we are children? Because although bodily we have grown up, spiritually we have not grown. Spiritually we are young children still. That is why parokshavado vedoyam balanam anushasanam. When you instruct children, you don't speak to them directly, you speak to them through stories. Children will like it, otherwise children won't like it. Therefore, balanam anushasanam parokshavado vedoyam. Vedam also, in a similar way, through stories, indirectly, everything is spoken for these children of spiritual life, like us. So Krishna also saying here, parokshavado krishayam paroksham mamacha priyam. I also like it that way. After saying that, Krishna is saying in this verse, shabda brahmam sudurbhodham pranendriyam manomayam anandaparam gambhiram durvigahyam samudravat. That is the verse Krishna is saying like that. So, what does that mean? It means that if this verse is expanded, it will be very boring. This verse. If you expand that verse in detail, it is very boring topic it is. Because Shabda Brahma means what? Shabda Brahma means Vedam. Shabda Brahma means Vedam. Vedam, Krishna is saying, is sudurbhodham. Sudurbhodham means very difficult to know. What Vedam is saying is very difficult to know. Because pranam, indriyam, manomayam. Pranam, indriyam, manomayam. Pranan. Pranan and the mind and the senses, they all come into that. In what sense? Krishna says that you remember, if you look into the, that's the same thing coming up again here. If you look into the 12th chapter in this 11th canto, 12th chapter, there is a verse there, 17th verse. This 17th verse is in reply to Uddhava's doubts. Uddhava had some doubts. If you look the 16th verse, you will see Uddhava's doubt. Uddhava saying, like Uddhava had doubts about Vidhi Nishedam, in the same way, Uddhava had doubt here. Samshayam shrunato vacham tava yogeshwareshwara na nivartada almasto yena bhramyedi me mana. That was the doubt. I am completely confused, says. Who says? Uddhava. So when Uddhava is so confused after hearing from Krishna, so confused he was, he's saying, I don't understand anything what you are saying. And I am completely confused. Brahmyadi me mana. My mind is in total confusion. As usual, without answering the question, Krishna started saying things completely different. Sa, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Sa yesha jivo vivara prasuti pranena ghoshena guham pravishtaha manomayam sushmam upetya rupam matra swaro varna iti stavishtaha. That same verse is coming here again in a different form. Words are changed, but the principle is the same. Krishna is saying like this, that Krishna, who is present in all of us, where is he present in us? Where is he present? He says that he is going to the yoga side now. In yogam, Ashtanga yogam, they have what they call it, the different chakram, isn't it? Manipuragam. Kundalini start rising from the different, through different chakras in the body. And they are called the Adharam, the seven stages, I think the yogis call it as the seven stages through which the Kundalini flows through the body. Krishna says that Adharam means in this Adhara Chakram, that means all these seven different chakras in the body. Krishna, who is present there, he keeps traveling from through for the sound track. What is the sound track? Para, Pashyandi, Madhyama, Vaikari. Jiva is the sound there. Pranan is the sound. They are no different. When you speak in the terms of Ashtanga Yogam, you call it as Pranan. It is the same thing what we call it as Shabda Brahman. Shabda Brahman. He is coming through this body and his journey begins from Mooladharam. Mooladharam, Swadhisthanam, Manipuragam, Anahadam, Vishuddhi, Ajna, Sahasraram. These are the different places where this pranam moves through. Starting from Mooladharam. Mooladhara Chakram. Swadhisthanam, Manipuragam, Anahadam, Vishuddhi, Ajna, Sahasraram. That is that sequence. You will see in some photographs, they will show you these different chakras where they are in the body. They are not visible to us, but they exist. It's a subtle side of the body. From the Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. Patanjali is the personality who has revealed all these things. When sound goes through that, this chakram, it gets different features. When it starts its journey, it's pure. That is why it's called para. Pashyandi Madhyama Vaikari. When it comes to the abdomen, in that stage, that is Pashyandi. It begins at Mooladharam, it is called Paranadam. Paranadam it's called. When it comes to the abdomen area, it is called Pashyandi. When it comes to the heart, it's called Madhyama. When it comes through the lips, it's called Vaikari. Vaikari. What we hear, speak, is Vaikari. What comes through the lips is called Vaikari. When it comes through the heart, it is called Madhyama. When it comes through the abdomen area, that is when it is called Pashyandi. And when it begins from the right down at the Mooladharam, it is called Para. So, if you look at that words in the 12th chapter, Krishna is saying, Manomayam Sayesha Jivo Bivara Prasuti Pranena Goshena Guham Pravishtaha Manomayam Sushvamubaiti Rupam Matra Sarovarnam Idistavishtaha. He says that in different, when the sound goes through these different stages or different chakras, the different aspects of the sound, hraswadi matra, udatam, kakara varnam, it becomes gross and gross. By the time when it came through the mouth, it has become fully gross. That is why Vaikari is considered to be the most gross form of the song. It's more subtle when it is in the this portion, in the heart. It's subtle. Subtle than that is at the abdomen level. Subtle than that is when it started its journey. That Paranadam, which begins from the very deep of the Muladharam stage, that is the sound of the Vedam, which is vibrating in the sky. You know that all the Upanishads were revealed through the sound. The rishis heard the sound from the sky, and it came out through them in the form what you read today in the books. So that is why all the Upanishads are revealed knowledge, revealed in the sense that in its pure form, Paranadam, it was vibrations in the sky. For example, just like we are speaking, right? And the waves of sound are coming out. How far this wave will go? It goes on and on and on and on and on and on. It becomes endlessly, it goes in the creation, isn't it? It doesn't stop anywhere. That's the beauty of the sound wave. Sound wave, okay, we have instruments to measure it up to a certain level. But we don't know the vibrations that has been released in this world from time immemorial are present there still in this world. In this world, they are still present. That is what the rishis are saying. So the Upanishads' knowledge that they have received is from the vibrations that has been received at the time of creation, which they have managed to capture, which we have got in the form of Upanishads today. Upanishads' knowledge has come like that. So Krishna is saying here that sa esha jivo vivara prasuti pranena ghoshena guham pravishtaha, that sound vibrations, when it joined the pranan, it has become jiva. Jiva was created. And then it started flowing through these different chakram, and it has become what we now refer to as the vibrations that comes through our mouth, the sound vibration. That is nothing but the vibrations of that jiva that has been formed inside in each one of us. If you look at that verse, Krishna says here that Alpa, in other words, all of us are nothing but reflections of that Shabda Brahma. Our manifestation in this, we are this what we see now through the senses is our gross manifestation in these different names and different forms and what we exist now. Because we are so gross, this is all what we see and this is all what we take seriously, isn't it? What Krishna is saying here, every jiva in this creation, sa esha jiva vivara prasuti, when he has born, he has come from the sound vibration he was born, Shabda Brahma. Along with that, this energy was imposed on him, what is called pranan. Pranan joined him. When they joined together, he started growing through the mind, growing through the mouth, he has come out and he has got his gross body. That means that jiva and that sound vibration together has travelled through the Mooladharam, Swadhisthanam, Manipuragam, Manahatam, Vishuddhi and all that. Eventually it came up to this gross body form, what is existing. And therefore Krishna says, and that original thing, which is that pranan, which combined with that sound vibration, is Krishna. That is Krishna. Because that pranan and that sound is Shabda Brahma, coming from the sound, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, when Chitrakedu went to see Balaram in the spiritual world, Balaram says to him, I have two features. Isn't it? In the sixth canto you can see. What is it? Shabda Brahmam, Parabrahmam. He says, I am Parabrahmam, I am also Shabda Brahmam. So in one level, in this body, we have to say like this. Some people realize the truth through sound, Shabda Brahmam. Some people realize the truth through knowledge, Jnanam, which is consciousness. Consciousness also has this another aspect. Parabrahmam is that consciousness aspect. Shabda Brahmam is the sound aspect. That is why great devotees who are great personalities in the sound side of it, they have realized the truth through the sound. Shabda Brahmam, they have realized. Nada Brahmam, they are called. Nada Brahmam, Shabda Brahmam. These are all rough given names, to, given names, names given to them. So Krishna is saying in these words that that Atma or the self is Krishna. It's no different from Krishna. And to impose any kind of ownership or doership on Atma is wrong. That is Ajnanam or Avidya. Kartrutva Bhoktrutvam does not exist in Atma. It does not exist in Atma. Similarly, Vidhi and Nishedam also is only in the state of ignorance, Ajnana Dasha. Only there, these Vidhi Nishedam applies. That means, we are in our Ajnana Dasha. Ajnana Dasha means ignorant state. We don't realize the self yet. If you have realized the self, you are not in the Ajnana Dasha. You are in the Jnana Dasha then. In the Ajnana Dasha, all this Vidhi Nishedam applies. Vidhi Nishedam applies. And in Ajnana Dasha, you have to, for your purification, you have to execute your dharmam according to what has been given to you, and that should be executed unattached to it. And when you are purified well enough inside, you should come to the spiritual life seriously. Take to Jnana Margam or Bhakti Margam or Karma Margam. Krishna says like that, isn't it? So therefore, if pure bhakti or pure knowledge has happened to a person, in that case, he doesn't have to follow any of the rules and regulations. In that state, Krishna says, you can take my shelter completely, provided you have reached that state, not before than that. And it won't cause any problems for that person. And following that verse, Krishna spoke many things, which you have to go back to that chapter again and study that. Yathana lekhe nilabandhu rushmam velena dharunyadi madhyamanam anuprajado havisha samidyade tathaiva me vyaktiriyam hivanim evam gadi karma gadir visargo granu rasodrak sparsha shrutischa sankalpa vijnanam adhabhimanam sutram raja sattvatamo vigaraham. Ayam hi jiva trivadabjayoni avyattameko vayasa samadhyam vishlishta shaktir bahudaiva bhadi bijani yonim pradibaddayadvad yasmin nidam pradam asheshamodam patho yathatandu vithana samstha ya esha samsaradaru puranaha karmalmagam pushpaphale prasude dve asya bije shadamulastrinalam panjaskanda panjarasa prasuti dashaika shako disuparna nidham trivalkalo thivalorkam pravishtaham adandi chaikam phalamasya gridraha gramachare gramecharamekam aranyavasa hamsayamekam bahurupam ijermayamayam vedasa vedavedam evam guru upasaneika bhaktya vidya kudharena shidena dhira vivrascha jivashema pramattam sambadhya chalpanamatham tyajastram. All these verses we discussed in the 12th chapter. So it's difficult now to go through all those verses again. So if you have followed those verses, then you can understand this one verse, what Krishna is saying here, from now on. They are connected to each other. Krishna is saying here, Shabda Brahmam Sudurbhodham Pranendriyam Manomayam Anandaparam Gambhiryam Durvigahyam Samudravat. So Vedam has got these four aspects. Which one? That Para Pashyandi Madhyama Vaikari. Vedam is sound, isn't it? Vedam is all sound vibration, is it not? All the Vedic hymns, when they chant, they don't know the meaning of the Vedic hymns. Many of them don't know. But what they practice is to chant correctly, to chant the Vedic hymns correctly. And that requires a lot of training. And Krishna mentions before that to understand Vedam is very difficult. He says here also, Shabda Brahmam Sudurbhotam Pranendriya Manomayam Anantaparam Gambhiram. If you hear Vedic chanting, you won't make out anything out of it. You will think, what are they saying? They are chanting hours and hours and hours they can chant. And they spend something like 15, 20 years in their life in memorizing the hymns, Vedic hymns. And while chanting, without fault they have to chant, without any error. If you make any error, the meaning will change. Krishna loves hearing the chanting of the Vedam. Chanting of the Vedam. Krishna loves that because it's about Krishna, isn't it? So that is why in the ancient temples, they have a system, they have brahmanas who will chant the Vedam for a certain number of hours. Particularly in Tirupati, it's very prominent that they will have so many people chanting the Vedam for hours and hours. That is their deity worship. Their deity worship is not all dressing and feeding Krishna all the time. That is another way of worshipping the deity. For them, Vedam is more important, chanting the Vedic hymns. So hours and hours from morning while waking the deities up for many, many hours, they continuously chant the Vedam at the temple because that is what Krishna wants to hear. Krishna wants to hear that. So therefore, while chanting, you have to chant properly, without mistakes. If we chant the Vedas, Krishna will get up and walk out from there. That's what will happen. So, therefore, you have to have the right people to chant who are trained in that way. And the training requires a very, very elaborate years and years of training. And in that process, to get the sound right, you will see some of the things they do to the children when they are learning. They will hold the neck and twist it to get the sound right. You may say it is like a child abuse or something when you see that. But from their point of view, it's not child abuse. You should not think. You can see, because you'll go to the internet and look at them. They put the photos all on the internet. And if you look that, there, a very grown-up person is holding the child's neck and he's twisting it to get the sound right. If you see that, oh, how cruel it is, you may say. You will phone up. Child abuse is going on. Get him here. No, it's not child abuse. It is because that child who had all the desire to learn the Vedam and to chant properly, he requires that adjustments in the throat. So therefore, so many things they do to get that sound right. So their importance is not the meaning of the word. Importance is chanting it correctly. Even today, but to a very limited extent, there is Vedic scholars assembly. When they meet up with each other, they have this competition of chanting the Yajurvedam, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, all these things. So while chanting, they have, if you go and sit there, you can watch them chanting. For hours and hours it will be going on, this competition among them, among the scholars. And important, none of them knows the meaning of the verses what they are chanting. All they are doing is they are chanting as it should be chanted, with the proper sound vibrations. So here, that is why Krishna is saying here, the meaning of the Vedam is very difficult to know. What the Vedic hymns are saying, that's very difficult to know. Krishna is saying this, Anandaparam Gambhiram, he says, of that sound, what is coming from the Vedic hymns. Even in the recent times, because Vedam, the only Bhashyam, commentary written on the Vedam, is a personality called Sayanacharya. Sayanacharya was an Acharya who was the brother of Vidyaranya Swamiji, who was a minister in the, who established the Vijayanagaram Empire. Hari and Bukka and Hari, the two personalities who established the Vijayanagaram Empire. And it is in his empire that Vidyaranya Swamiji was the minister. Later on he gave up all that and he wrote Panchadashi and finally he became the Sringeri Acharya at one stage in his very late life. It is his brother Sayanacharya, he wrote very elaborate commentaries on the Vedam. Vedam, he wrote elaborate commentaries. None of the Acharyas have written commentaries on the Vedam. For example, Shankaracharya, Ramanuja and all, they didn't touch the Vedam. What they have done is, they have taken what Shankaracharya did was, he took only the Upanishads part of the Veda and commented on that. That's what he did. Then he commented on Brahma Sutram of Vedavyasa Maharshi, but not on the Vedam itself. He hasn't done any commentary on that. Nor Ramanujacharya, nor Madhvacharya, none of them. What they have done is that the Upanishad part of the Vedam they have taken, and Brahma Sutram they have taken, Bhagavad Gita they have taken, and they have written their commentary and established their philosophy based on that. That's what they did. On the Vedam, there is not many acharyas have written, because nobody could write even today exactly tell you what it all means. Vedic hymns, it's so difficult. Krishna also says, Shabda Brahmam Sudurbhodham Pranendriya Manomayam Anandaparam Gambhiram Durvigahyam Samudravad. Krishna is saying, the only person who knows Vedam is me. Nobody else. He says that. The only person who knows Vedam is me, because it's from me it has come. Now, after saying this, Sainacharya wrote his commentary, and then later on, because it's not written anywhere, no commentary is still existing, Dayananda Saraswati, who started Arya Samaj, he wrote the commentary on that. In his own way, he gave some explanations there. But still, people are not satisfied. Is that what it means? They're asking what that means. Then, you know this, what's his name? Aravinda Ghosh, who took to Vedam later on. And he gave his interpretations of the Vedam in his own way. So we have got his interpretation. We have got interpretation from the Dayananda Saraswati, and we have got interpretation from Sainacharya. Generally, Sainacharya's interpretation is accepted among the higher circles. But still, because they were not satisfied with that, they are saying it has got another meaning to it. So they brought in other commentaries on the Vedam. So Vedam still remains as an unknown thing. If you ask many of those people who chant the Vedic hymns, they don't know the meaning of it. They don't need to know also, because they know that they can chant the Vedic hymns properly. That's all matters. That's all it matters. So it is on the strength of that Krishna is saying here, Shabda Brahmam Sudur. Shabda Brahmam is the Vedic hymns. Vedic hymns is the Shabda Brahmam, isn't it? Sudurbhodham, very, very difficult to understand. Pranendriya Manomayam. It is full of pranam, the mind, and the senses. All of them is important in that. And by nature itself, it cannot be known. It's beyond time and space. And the meaning is also very, very difficult to know. Now, that sound that is coming out, Krishna is saying, Pranendriya Manomayam, Anandaparam Gambhiryam Durvigahyam Samudravat, he is saying. Durvigahyam Samudravat, it's an ocean. This Vedam is an ocean, Krishna is saying. Like ocean, you cannot know the depth of the ocean, how deep it is. Deeper than that is this Vedam. If you go into Vedam and try to find out what it all means, you will be going into the depth of it and you will lost in that process. Durvigahyam Samudravat. That is why how Krishna is putting it here. Anandaparam Gambhiram, he says. Now, when that sound comes out from the body, it has got this para, pashyandi, madhyama, vaikari. Out of these four, three of them, para, pashyandi, and madhyama, is unknown to us. Is it not? What you got in there is only vaikari. You see? What you got is only vaikari. When they are chanting the mantram also, what you are hearing is only the vaikari of it. Para and Pashyandi and Madhyama is unknown to you. When Krishna is hearing, he is hearing the para, pashyandi, madhyama, and vaikari. We only hear the vaikari. That is what Krishna is saying here. That chatvari vak paramida padani. Shruti says that vaka or word has got these 4 feet. Which one? Para, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vaikari. They are the 4 feet. And our limitation is we only know one of the feet. 1 feet. Vedam has got 4 feet. Para, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vaikari. And we know only 1 feet. Look at the next few verses. They are more complex than this one. This verse itself is difficult to explain it and to understand it. It's so difficult. Mayoba brahmhidam bhumnam brahmana ananda shaktinam bhudeshu kosha rubena viseshu urneva lakshyate eta urnana brahkhadaya durnam udhumade mukhad akashat ghoshavan prano manasa sparsha rubinah chandomayam amrutamayam sahasrapadavim prabhu ओंकाराल व्यंजितस्पर्शम स्वरम ऊष्मांदस्थभूषिताम विचित्रभाषा विददाम छंदोमिश्चतुरुत्तरे अनंदपारम बृहदीम सृजत्याक्षिपदे स्वयं गायत्री उष्टिप अनुष्टुप्च बृहदी पंक्तिरेव च त्रिषट् उपजगदि अधिच्छन्दो जगत् अधिच्छन्दो अत्यष्टदि जगद्विराट् किं विदते किमाचष्टे किमनूद्य विकल्पयेद् इत्यस्य हृदयं लोके नान्यो मद्वेद कश्चन मां विदते अभिदते मां विकल्प्य आपोहिदे त्वहं एदावान् सर्ववेदार्थं शब्दम् आस्थाय मां भिदां माया मात्रमनूद्यान्ते प्रतिषेध्य प्रसीदति. दैट इज ऑल कृष्ण क्लोसेस दैट चैप्टर. मोर ऑर लेस आई कैन गारंटी यू, if you read the translation and the purport of all these verses in your book, you won't figure out anything what is being spoken there. You won't get any clue what is being spoken there. So, and Krishna himself is saying that, kim vidhate kim achaste kim anudya vigalpayet ityasya hridayam loge nanyo madveda kaschana. So, and 42 words. To understand what it all means is very difficult, Krishna is saying. That, and then at that time, Uddhava says to Krishna, show me some mercy. You said, oh, like we say, isn't it? Can't get head and tail of this thing. Show me some mercy. So same thing, Uddhava is also saying to Krishna, show me some mercy now. I can't understand what you are saying. He says, when only few verses was enough, it put Uddhava off. Uddhava couldn't do anything at that. Because you can see these verses from 36 onwards. He says that even Jaimini was an expert in the Vedam. Vedavyasa Maharshi's disciple, Jaimini. Why Jaimini is quoted here? Because Jaimini is the personality who spoke Karma Mimamsa. It is Jaimini's branch. Pailan is gone Rigvedam. Rigvedam is Pailan. And Jaimini is the one who could Yajurvedam. So therefore 4 sages were Vedavyasa Maharshi's disciples. Pailan, Jaimini, Sumandhu and Atharvava. They are their names. And what Vedavyasa Maharshi did was, Vedavyasa Maharshi took Vedam completely and split it into 4. Rigka, Samam, Yajurvedam, Atharvavedam. And he taught one branch to one disciple. Rigvedam to Pailan, Yajurvedam to Jaimini, Samavedam to, I think, Sumandhu, and Atharvana Vedam to Atharvava. That is how these 4 branches of Vedams have come. Out of that, Karmakandam is all in the Yajurvedam. And Jaimini is the person who has studied this Vedam. And Krishna is saying here, even Jaimini has not understood Vedam. The one who has studied Vedam from Vedavyas and was spoken about that, even he hasn't properly understood. So from there you can understand that where we will be. If we read all this translation, that too, you are studying in another language and that to somebody else's purport and someone else's translation. By the time it gets into your mind, it will be something totally different. So, All this is there in the Ekadasha Skandham. So you have to talk about it. There's no other way. There's no simplifying this. You can't simplify these things, isn't it? So, and particularly this part, as we said, that Jaimini taught the Karma Mimamsa to his disciples. Mandana Mishra was one like that, who became Surashracharya later. So Mandana Mishra learned from, he was a very well-known Mimamsa philosopher at his time, who Mandana Mishra. His son was Kumarila Prabhakara Bhatta. And so I think it's also called as Kumarila Bhatta. Lord Subramanya, Kartikeya, he came as his son. Sureshwaracharya or Mandana Mishra was Brahma's another incarnation, they say. And similarly, his son, Kumarila Bhatta, was also incarnation of Subramanyam. Subramanyam, you can see the word itself is one who has got the best Brahmanyam. Brahmanyam means Brahmanical quality in him. Highly learned, highly knowledgeable he was, Subramanyam. He came as Kumarila Bhatta. And he learned the same Yajurvedam in the form of this Jaimini's branch. And he expanded on that, and that is called Bhatta Mimamsa. Bhatta Mimamsa it is called. It's a whole story about all these things, very interesting stories, if you want to look back into it. How this Mimamsa philosophy was very predominant before Lord Buddha appeared. It is that Mimamsa philosophy was so prominent and everyone followed Mimamsa philosophy very seriously, performing sacrifices. Very, very highly qualified brahmanas and the kings who were willing to invest a lot of money into performing sacrifices. That was the spiritual life then because of the power of this Yajurvedam. And there, because to conduct a proper sacrifice, you need qualified people, first of all, highly qualified people. Only then your sacrifice will come through. You may be willing to spend the money, but you need the right people to do it, isn't it? So all those things were there, and Jaimini believed very strongly in the Yajurvedam, and that was the philosophy, Jaiminiya Mimamsa, it is called. So here, he was a great rishi as well, Vedavyasa Maharshi's direct disciple, and he says here, even Jaimini couldn't follow it. And but Mayoba Brahmidam Bhumna Brahmana Ananda Shaktina. This is only possible, Krishna says, when you become very, very subtle in your understanding of things. So there we'll come back to this later. So Krishna is saying here that the Vedam has spoken all these things. In the Bhagavadam, Krishna says, like that. So, Vedam goal is this, he says, that after all these knowledge, what has been spoken here, he says that in Vedam, there are topics related to sense enjoyment. Topics related to sense enjoyment. And there are many things spoken about that. And if you want to understand why all these things are spoken there, Krishna says, Durvigahyam, he uses the word, Durvigahyam, Bhodavat Samudravat, he says, isn't it? He says there, it is difficult to understand Durvigahyam, Anandabharam Gambiram Durvigahyam Samudravat. Saying that, Krishna stopped. He didn't say anything further than that. Durvigahyam Samudravat. Samudra means ocean. When you see from outside, it looks simple. Loads of water, huge quantity of water, isn't it? But if you go deep into the ocean, what do you see? You see another world which is 3 or 4 times bigger than the ground, earth, isn't it? In this earth, you know, the water is more than anything else in the earthly planet, isn't it? So in that huge volume of water, earth is only a very small part of that. Earth is only a very small part of that. So there is a whole creation inside that water in the earth, isn't it? So Krishna is saying here, first of all, know the goal of Vedam. First of all, know the goal of the Vedam. And the goal of the Vedam, Krishna is saying to us, is knowledge of the self. Is knowledge of the self. Vedam would have spoken many things. Don't worry about that, Krishna says. Don't worry about what Vedam has spoken. And you don't have to know all of that, what Vedam has spoken. It is massive, what Vedic literature. Massive in the sense that to practice chanting these Vedic hymns and to reach perfection, it takes a lifelong effort. There are very few people whom you can say who has the knowledge of it today in the world. In the world, there's very, very few people who have, in the generation, who have still, and that too, of, if you take all the Vedam together, Rikha, Samam, Yajurva, Atharana Vedam, in one place, you can't find a scholar who knows all. It's not there. In different pockets of the, in different places, there are people who knows different parts. But even if you put them all together, you can't say that they have everything. They still don't have everything. Even though this Vedam is so dear to Krishna. So dear to Krishna. Krishna, that is why many, they have certain statements about that. Out of so many hymns in the Rigvedam, so many hymns are available now. Yajurvedam, a lot of it is lost. Same thing with Samavedam and Atharvana Vedam also. So Krishna pointing out here one thing is, in Bhagavadam what Krishna is saying to us is, you don't need to know all that Vedam completely. There is no need for that. If you understand the goal of Vedic literature is only one thing, to get you out from this bodily existence and to realize the self. So he says here, Tamevega janatha almanam anya vacho vimunchada amrudashesa hedustam hetuhu. Vedam says that for experiencing that immortality, that is the goal, isn't it, to realize the truth. For that purpose, I'll put a bridge for you to get there. Almanam janataha. Know yourself first. That is more important. And know very well what does Atma means. What does the soul means. In other words, you can give up everything else if you have come to that understanding. So this is the, Krishna is saying, this is the direct bridge for that. How to know that? And Krishna says, I will tell you how to do that. And he says, first thing, you have to approach this spiritual master who has realized. And you have to ask him about the knowledge of the Upanishads. Knowledge of the Upanishads. And then whatever you have heard from him, you should sit quietly and reflect on that and inquire about it yourself. What does that? I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this intelligence, I'm not this ego, I am something beyond than that. And beyond than that, who is that? That is that truth within me. And in that way, you should become a, realize the Atmajnani. You should become a Atmajnani. Krishna is saying here, realizing in this way is the goal of life. That is how he concludes that chapter. The last verse, if you look in that chapter, he will say here that Mam vidatte abhidatte mam mam vigalpya bohyade tvaham edavan sarvavedartham shabdam astayamam vidam maya matramanudhyande pradishidya prasidadi. Because these verses are so difficult, as Krishna says, to understand. Understand means, even great scholars, Krishna says, even Jaimini himself does not understand. Therefore, what Krishna says here is that do not bother about them too much. Purpose of spiritual life is to realize the self, the goal. And mam vidate abhidate mam vigalpya bohyade tvaham Edavan Sarva Vedartha Shabdam Astayamam Vidham. Krishna says here, understand this much, that whatever you achieve in this world through karmam, throw it away. Whatever you can acquire through karmam, you throw it away. After throwing that away, something or through jnanam also, for example, through knowledge, you acquire this understanding, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this intelligence, I'm not this ego, all these things. If you reject everything, body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, all that sort of thing, you reject that. Whatever you are achieving in this world through karmam, reject that also. After rejecting everything, whatever that is left behind, that is the knowledge of the self. And what is left then is this awareness inside, isn't it? Avabhodam. What Krishna calls it as Nyapti or Avabhodam. And that is what you are. You know that, says Krishna. Krishna says to Uddhava, Ma edavan sarva veda artham shabdam astayamam vidham maya matramanudyande pradishidya prasidadi. That is how Krishna concludes that chapter. Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, that karmagandam present me is, karmagandam is also centered around me. But I am presented in karmakandam in the form of sacrifice. In the form of sacrifice. My manifestation in karmakandam is yajnam. Remember yajnam, 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 yajnam. Krishna keeps saying this. Yajnam rupam. So in Vedam, these three divisions, branches exist. Karmakandam, jnanakandam, upasanakandam. Or bhakti kandam they call it. So, karmakandam is this yajnam. Karmakandam is yajnam. When Lord Varaha appeared, do you remember in the Bhagavatam? Varaha Murti appeared, Lord Varaha. The rishis looked at that body and started thinking, what kind of body is this? Krishna has come and said, what is that body? Boar, Varaham, boar. So, Krishna has come in the body of Varaham, boar, and the rishis looked at Krishna's body, Varaha body, and they started discussing each other. This is definitely Krishna has come, but why this body? Question came up. Why this body? Why a body like a boar? And there, rishis are saying, this Varaham's actual name is Yajna Varaham. Yajna Varaham is called. And all the parts of that body is connected to different aspects of the sacrifice. In a sacrifice, you need so many things, isn't it? You require for sacrifice various ingredients for the sacrifice. The special tools what you need for the sacrifice. The special sacrificial arena what you build for making sacrifice. Then different things like butter, ghee and so many kinds of different kinds of kusha grass, and there is so many other things also related to that sacrifice which will be, you'll see in each sacrifice has different requirements. What the rishis did, they glorified that form of Varaham, addressing it as Yajna Varaham. Why Yajna Varaham means? They are saying to Varahamurti, your body is like this, he says. If you look into the third canto, you will see there that your nostrils are these tools of Yajna sacrifice. The body which has got a lot of hair on the boar's body, all that body is the grass what is required for the sacrifice. And the whole body they have broken into different elements and glorifying Varahamurti as the personification of sacrifice, yajnam. Personification of sacrifice or yajnam. That is how Varahamurti is glorified in the Bhagavatam. So similarly here, Krishna is saying like this, that this yajna rupam in karma gandam, I am glorified in the form of sacrifice. Krishna is saying, karma gandam, I am glorified in the form of sacrifice. Krishna is saying. So karma gandam is also glorification of Krishna, but in a different form. In a different form. If you want to understand this a little better, go back to third canto and read that Varahamurti's appearance and Rishi sages glorifying Varahamurti. Lord Varaha. Through their glorification, if you read, you will see that Varaham has come in the form of Yajna Varahamurti. Yes, Yajnam personified. Yajnam, sacrifice personified is Varahamurti. They are addressing him like that. You can understand that there. So here again, Krishna is saying, Mam vidhate abhidhate cha. In karma gandam, I am glorified in the form of yajnam, he says. In the upasana kandam, I am glorified in the form of deities, different expansions of me. That is, it is from upasana kandam, all the different forms of deity worship has come from the Vedam. Vedam itself has got these three branches. Jnana kandam, karma kandam, upasana kandam. From karma kandam, Krishna has come in the form of yajnam, sacrifice. In the upasana kandam, Krishna is saying, I am come in the form of different deities. Shiva, Vishnu, Brahma, and Ganesh, Devi, Sri Parvati. These are all my different forms for upasana kandam. That is why, if you look into the upasana kandam of the Vedam, you will see the glorification of different deities. Glorification of different deities. So, karma kandam, in the form of sacrifice, yajnam, Krishna has come. In the upasana kandam, Krishna says, I have come in the form of different devadas, I have come. Then, in the jnana kandam, Krishna says, what is jnana kandam? Jnana kandam is rejecting everything, isn't it? I'm not this body, I'm not this intelligence, I'm not this ego, I'm not the senses, I'm not this, any of this, what we are experiencing. Negation process is there. After denying everything, what finally exists is me, Krishna says. That is how you realize in the jnana kandam. So, these three yoga system, karma kandam, jnana kandam, upasana kandam, in the Vedam, leads us to the same truth, but through three different processes. That is what Krishna is talking about in this chapter. There is some more things to talk about it. We shall do it on Monday. Sorry, tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.